Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premiere Networks on Saturday, November 5th, 2016. This is our Leet episode, 1,337. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Texture, the mobile app that lets you access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your phone or tablet. For your free trial, visit texture.com/twit. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/tech guy. And by Jira Service Desk from Atlassian. Jira Service Desk delivers everything your IT team needs out of the box at a cost-effective price. For a free 7-day trial of Jira Service Desk, visit atlassian.com/twit. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you want to talk about tech. That's what I do. 888-827-5536. We try to talk about tech in English. Sometimes we lapse into nerd. But, you know, if such a thing should happen, slap me around and let me know, and I'll try to translate. Website is techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. And that's a good place to remember because the phone number's there, the link to our great chat room, which is always open at irc.twit.tv. That's there. And, of course, answers to questions, audio and video of previous shows. This is our episode 1,337. 1,337 is a magic number for geeks. It's our Leet episode in hack. What is that? Leet speak? Yeah, where you substitute numbers for letters. The one is an L. The threes are E's, and the seven is T. So that's Leet. And it's Leet Speak. So this is the geekiest show we'll ever do, except for maybe episode 1024, 2048, or 4096, God willing. Who'd have thought we'd have got to 1337? I mean, after all, 1337. And this is they got it a little bit wrong in Back to the Future. The Cubs didn't win the World Series till this year. So I don't know what that means, but the Cubs won the World Series, and that's good. And we got an election on Tuesday, and we're all kind of on pins and needles about that. We did a couple of shows on election hacking and that kind of thing, which you can watch on our website, twit.tv. It's our triangulation show. twit.tv/TRI, and I've also interviewed some of the people from a website called verifiedvoting.org, and their goal, you know, about maybe 14, 15 years ago, we were moving in this direction that I think was a bad direction, towards these direct entry voting machines. They were touch, very high tech, touch screens, and you'd vote and you'd touch the screen, and there were issues with them. There were a number of issues with them. And, you know, sometimes I think people think, oh, you're the tech guy. You should be, everything tech should be, you know, you want to do, make the world high tech. Well, sometimes no. And these voting machines were problematic for a couple of reasons. If they weren't perfectly aligned, you could be touching one button and it could record another vote. And that happens a lot. A technician has to come in and align them. The company Diebold that was making them didn't do a great job. They had problems with bad vote counts in one election in Volusia County. I think it was in Nevada. And they blamed, get this, the McAfee antivirus on the voting machine. And I don't know about you, but if a voting machine needs an antivirus, that's a problem. And then they blamed the bad count on the antivirus. That's even like the antivirus could do that? That's not good. There was a documentary produced in 2006 on this, Hacking Democracy? And there was a professor in Princeton who actually got in trouble for reverse engineering the Diebold machines. Diebold sued him for violating the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. That's secret stuff. You're not supposed to look at that. Ed Felton. Nevertheless, it came out that these machines were eminently hackable. And because, and this was the key, they didn't produce a paper trail of any kind. They were deemed a risk, and they're mostly phased out. They're still used in a few states. I think New Jersey, Georgia, and Louisiana still use some sort of direct voting machine. But most other states in the country, and probably where you vote, it could be electronic, but there is a paper. This is what all the experts say. There needs to be a paper trail. So where I vote, we get one of those, you know, those exam. When you're taking the exams as a kid, you'd do number two pencil in the little thing, and then the machine would count it. But there was a paper, piece of paper that somebody, a human, could look at and compare with the electronic total. And that's true in most cases. Even with direct voting machines, they spit out a little receipt. And the key here is that you look at the paper and you look at what your vote is and you see if they match. And then, and this is what verifiedvoting.org is lobbying for, and I think in many states this is starting to happen, there is an audit process that can go on. Not a full recount, but they can take a random sample of votes, compare them to the electronic total, and if the paper and the electronic votes match, that gives you some certainty that everything's working as planned. So between all of this, actually, elections have gotten much better in this country. They're much more reliable because they're a little lower tech. Now, you may have seen there's a little brouhaha going on because people are going, and it's already started, to the polls, and they're taking Snapchats and Instagrams, and they're tweeting their vote.
Hey, look, I voted. I voted for Hillary. I voted for Donald.
You know, they're tweeting that as a way, you know, fun advocacy. Some states, that's illegal. In fact, many states are not allowed to bring your cell phone into the voting booth. And here's why. The issue is that if you were going to buy somebody's vote, here's $10 to vote the way I want you to vote, you would want some proof that that happened. So a picture of the ballot in the voting booth would be exactly what you'd want. So that's why that's considered illegal in some states. Simple. I don't think a lot of people are going to do it anyway. I doubt there'll be any prosecutions. When I talk to the experts, they're not so much worried about massive voter fraud because it would have to be massive to really throw an election, a national election anyway. More they're worried about, and this they say is a legitimate worry because we've seen it happening, the data of the voter database is being hacked. And we've seen attempts by, we think, government actors to hack the voter databases. What would you do? Well, a couple of things you could do. You could say, take all the Republican votes and put those voters in a different district. So when they voted, they wouldn't be on the list when they showed up at the poll, or maybe their vote would – they'd get a provisional vote, which would later be disallowed. So that's a larger fear, is that somebody, and maybe another country that wants to influence our elections, or a candidate that doesn't want to lose, might do that, might – mess with the voter databases. And actually, I think it's at last count, 40 states have asked the Department of Homeland Security to come in and help them secure the voter databases to make sure that their computers are secure, that they're locked down, they're not hackable. And that's the biggest concern among computer experts, technology experts, and voting experts at this point. There is a system. See, there's certain things a vote needs to be. Of course, it needs to be accurate. And all parties involved, the voter and the candidates, need to have confidence that the vote is properly recorded. So at the end of the day, everybody can say, well, it was fair. That's really important. You also have – those are the three things. The kind of a secondary thing is you want it to be fairly quick. You don't want this to drag on for months, right? You'd like to get those results fairly quickly. That's one of the reasons people have looked at electronic voting. What everybody agrees is that online voting, and that might seem convenient, right, the idea. We do have some online voting for people overseas, military and so forth. But online voting is not what any computer expert, technology expert, or voting expert believes should be happening because it's, as we know, it's a mess online. It's eminently hackable. So it's a fascinating subject. If you want to know more, verifiedvoting.org. It's a nonpartisan site talking about this. And it's a fascinating subject. The good news is we've made really significant progress. Anyway, we'll take a break. I just wanted to mention that since we're getting up on November 8th. Make sure you vote. We'll take your calls next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. How about them Cubbies? Huh? Are you happy, Heather Hammond, Phone Ranger? Now explain to me, are you from Chicago? Is that it?
Yeah, that's where the Chicagoland went to high school in formative years, et cetera.
And you were a South Side fan.
North Side.
Yeah, right? Because it's because you got the White Sox and the North Side and the – I can't remember the –
That was it.
Yeah.
Anyway,
and the Cubbies. Anyway, you know, I was if it can't be the Giants, I'm happy to see the Cubs win.
Right?
108 years, that's a long time.
And what a great moment for this country, I think. Just the most beautiful distraction you could have.
Oh, and the best game of baseball I've ever seen in my life. Game 7 tied up after 9. I mean, you can't all credit to Cleveland. You can't. I mean, that's as close as you can get. Very exciting, very exciting. So, HH, you're the phone ranger. That means you've been answering the phone. Who should I talk to here?
I'm going to show some favoritism here, being fully transparent. Ariel wasn't the first caller, but since Ariel is calling from Israel,
oh, wow.
I think we'll move her to the head of the line.
I think so. Hey, thank you, Heather Hammond. Hello, is it Ariel or Ariel?
It's, well, in Hebrew, it's Ariel, but... you can call me Ariel. It's fine. However you want to say it.
Ariel is the fairy, and Ariel is. What does Ariel mean? Is it also an angel?
No, it means the lion of God.
Love it.
Yeah.
Are you a lion? Hello. Oh.
Can you hear me?
Yes, getting a little clicking in the line. That's
oh,
all.
Okay.
What can I do for you, Ariel?
So I can.
Linux, you know what? Your friends are calling you to say, hey, Ariel, you're on the radio right now. And that's your call waiting.
Actually, no.
Oh, okay.
No. I don't think most friends even know about you or this podcast.
I guess not, since we're in the States. But you got to tell everybody in Israel. I was just on the most popular Israeli podcast, They Tell Me. Doing an interview, so maybe a few people know. Anyway, I'm sorry. What can I do for you, Ariel?
Okay. So I came here to talk to you about some Linux distributions.
Well, okay.
Now I am running Windows.
Yep.
I use my computer for school. I got a permission. I write in my laptop instead of a notebook with a pencil. So... my friends are not techie, but they are jealous because I can write with a computer. I can just type. But my battery life on my laptop is pretty bad, and I had some performance issues. So I thought that it would be good if I would switch to Linux and it would save battery life.
Yeah.
And,
so let me talk about a few things, because do you use, when you say pencil, you mean you type, though, on the keyboard. You're not doing touch with a pencil, are you?
No. I just type.
Okay, good.
Type.
Yeah, because Windows and, for instance, programs like OneNote are designed to do that, but it's a different matter for Linux. In general, Linux and touch, you can use touch on Linux, but it's really a mouse-based operating system.
My computer doesn't have a touch screen.
Even better. Battery life is another issue. Often, PCs designed for Windows get the best battery life on Windows. There are things you can use on Linux to improve battery life. In particular, there's a program called TPL that is designed to improve battery life. And I find with a little effort, I can get most of my Linux laptops to have battery life that's as good or almost as good as the Windows version. So don't do it to get better battery life, because really what you'll be hoping to get is, it's TLP, not TPL, the Advanced Linux Power Management Tool. And it doesn't usually come with Linux, but it's something you can easily install on Arch, Debian. Yeah, you can apt-get. In fact, apt-get TLP should install it for you. That's the installer in Ubuntu. Okay. You're using Ubuntu. Or Debian.
I have two computers.
Yeah.
One that is my daily driver is running Windows 10.
Yep.
And the second one is pretty old. So I started Linux with Ubuntu, and then I switched to Linux Mint. I really like Linux Mint.
Yeah, it's basically Ubuntu with a nice fresh coat of cinnamon paint on top.
Yes, yeah. And I quite like it.
Good. It's very Windows-like. So, you can install on Cinnamon using apt-get. You can install TLP. That'll give you better power management.
I know.
Yeah.
The thing is, I learned my stuff about Linux, but I'm not that good in it.
Oh, you'll get better. That's the way to get better, right?
Yes.
You know, it's interesting. A lot of it's not just Windows users. I kind of started using Linux after being annoyed at Windows annoying me all the time about going to Windows 10. I said, oh, that's enough of that. But even Mac users now, because Apple's come out with new laptops that are expensive and not particularly exciting for some power users. The problem with Linux is you can't run very easily anyway Macintosh or Windows designed programs. You really have to run those Linux programs. In many cases, there are Linux programs as good, but not every case. Yes. There are a few programs that you might miss.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes I did some video editing and I missed my software, but I know that there are alternatives.
I really think that a lot of people, including students like you, should be looking at Linux. It's a very good option, and it's free, and it's powerful, and there's lots of choice there. I like open source because we can verify that it's not been modified in some way to spy on you.
And I just love that it's free.
Yeah.
And anyone could use it.
Yeah.
How it works.
Do you do any programming, Ariel?
I am learning programming on lynda.com.
Good man. So that's very key, by the way, because I think that people who use Linux have a kind of an advantage if they want to become kind of hardcore techies, whether it's programming or system management or system administration. You're using a power tool, so it's good to learn the power tool and take advantage of it, right?
Yes, I agree.
So, the only suggestion I have to get the best battery life is TLP. TLP. Okay. When you install it, it will have defaults that are usually pretty good, but you can really get more elaborate with it if you want to, if you start going into the configuration. But I put TLP on all my laptops, and I find it really does help often to improve the overall battery life of any Linux distribution. And thank you for calling. It's a good way to begin the Leet episode with a question about Linux. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson, home theater guru, coming up.
You're out.
Thank you, Ariel. So go ahead. I'm sorry. I had to go to a commercial, but you're still here.
Yeah, I know.
So that's great. What grade are you in?
I'm in ninth grade.
And do you speak English in school or Hebrew in school?
I speak Hebrew in school. Hebrew is my language.
You speak English very well.
Oh, thank you.
Do you study it in school?
Yes, but I don't learn much. Most of my English I taught myself by watching Steve Jobs introducing new iPhones and stuff.
That's a good way to learn English. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yes.
That's awesome. I'm very impressed, Ariel. Your parents must be impressed, too.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. Where in Israel do you live?
I live in Haifa.
Ah, nice. Is that on the ocean or is that inland?
Well, it's by the sea. It's by the sea. It's both on the sea level, and it does have mountains.
Perfect. So, sounds like California.
Yes. Yes.
Well, I've never been. Go ahead.
I was there for a year.
In California?
Yes. Oh. In eighth grade, I was in Albany.
Oh, just up the road a piece.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, we're in Petaluma, which is near Albany. Or were you in Albany, New York?
No, Albany, California.
Yeah, yeah, that's just over in the East Bay, yeah. Not far from us.
I heard that chime when you were about to go to the commercial, so yeah, I knew that you were going to say Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You can tell, huh?
Yes, I can tell. Well, I listened to a podcast, so I know.
Yes, so you're still on the podcast, you're just not on the radio right now.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Hey, there's a version of Linux that I really am interested in. I want to try. I would love to see what you think of it. It's called Elementary OS, and it's based on Ubuntu, but it's designed to look more like a Macintosh.
Yeah, I've heard some stuff about it.
Yeah, I'm starting to think that this is maybe what I'll start recommending to Macintosh people, because there's more and more of them going, oh, no, what am I going to do?
Yeah, well, I saw some pictures, and it looks very similar to Mac OS.
Yeah, they've skinned GNOME. Which test? You like Cinnamon, though, right?
Yes. Well, I used on my second computer Cinnamon, but I also really like Unity when I used Ubuntu.
I've heard good things. I'm not a huge fan of Unity, but I've heard some very good things about the next version. What is it, Unity 8? They're saying some very positive things, so I will be trying it again. I don't use Ubuntu. I use a version of Arch Linux called Antergos that I really like. It's very smart. And the nice thing about Arch is it has easily the best online documentation. It has the Arch Wiki. It's really amazing. In fact, even when I'm using Ubuntu or Mint or another flavor of Linux, I'll use the Arch Wiki for information. It's so good. So good.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it was a real pleasure talking to you, Ariel. I have to go back on the air now.
Thank you. I'm a huge fan, so have a nice day.
You too. Goodbye. Keep up the good work.
Yeah, thanks.
Call me again sometime, all right?
Okay,
Ariel. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, our show today brought to you by, the best thing if you travel, or if you like magazines, Texture. It's kind of Netflix for magazines. The idea that you pay once and you get access to hundreds of magazines on your phone, on your tablet. It's just awesome. TEXTURE, texture.com/twit. You can get a free sample so you can see, you know, what it'll do. I feel like magazines still do some great journalism, some great information. I really love the idea of, you know, there's always an article in Rolling Stone or The Atlantic or Vanity Fair that I want to read. The problem is I don't want to subscribe, you know, to those magazines and get all the extra stuff and kill all those trees. And, it's really expensive to buy it on the newsstand, so that doesn't seem like a good idea. Texture really solved this problem for me. And I'm going to give you a tip. You can get one Texture account and share it with up to 5 devices. So, for instance, in our family, Lisa, my wife, has the Texture account. But I share her account. So it's really economical, you know. She has the magazines she reads. I have the magazines I read. We both, you know, she likes Sports Illustrated. I like Esquire. She likes, you know, I like the cooking magazines. She likes People and Entertainment Weekly. And so this way we have access to all of them. You can have the magazines download. Yes, I'm the one reading AARP, the magazine. That's me. you can have them download to your device so you can read them offline, which is awesome. And there's stuff, too, that I like that I wouldn't probably ever read or subscribe to like Billboard. You know, that's my business. But I love having the charts there. If you like National Geographic or the photography magazines, they look so much better on a screen than they do in a magazine. They don't have to be, you know, the resolution of the image is much higher. Car and driver. If you want to practice your French, Chatelaine in French. And by the way, it's every page in the newsstand edition. Plus, they have back editions as well. They have magazines for kids and teens. Look at Cicada, the literary, poetry, and creative writing magazine for teens. That's awesome. Condé Nast Traveler, I love look. Consumer Reports, I love looking at all this stuff. I just think it's so much fun. So here's the deal. Try it free right now. Go to texture.com/twit. What's nice is you'll get exposed to new magazines you've never even heard of. And they have top stories and new and noteworthy sections that will point you to something interesting every day, something new. I love it. Texture. It's Netflix for magazines. That's really all you need to know. Texture. I'm just through the F's. I'm scrolling through them, scrolling. Texture.com/twit. Get the free trial. And I think you'll like it. You're into golf? Look at golf, golf digest, golf tips. Three golfing magazines. Health. Hello, Canada. Hot Rod. I love it. Interview magazine. There's always a good, at least one good article in so many of these magazines. Mac World. Anyway, try it. Texture.com/twit. Field and Stream, you bet. Money. National Geo, National Review, Newsweek. It's all there.
Hello, Scott Wilkinson.
Hello, Leo.
So, yeah, I think, because I can't remember what your settings were, but I think when I went back into custom, it was definitely unusual.
so yes.
I'm thinking okay, that's the right settings.
Yeah.
You'd think I could just look at it. No, but no, not that smart. It's time for Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru. Hello, Scott.
Hello, Leo.
And you sent me an email. I see that Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk now has a one-week run in Los Angeles at the new high frame rate version.
High frame rate, 4K, the whole full spec that Ang Lee shot it at and wants it to be seen in is only going to be seen for 1 week in L.A. at the Cinerama Dome, which is an Arclight theater now. But it's a famous theater, you know, the one. It's literally a dome on Sunset Boulevard.
Yeah.
And it'll be shown there for 1 week starting Thursday the 10th. It'll also be in New York at, I think it's called Lincoln Square. I don't remember the exact name of the theater there, but only those two places will you be able to see it in the full spec that Ang Lee wanted.
I'd really like to see that.
Oh, I hope you do. I hope you manage to come down and see it, because it really is something. It's as Ang Lee wanted. It's pointing the way toward the future of cinema. He's really redefined cinema and established a new language for cinema. So it's
I saw Doctor Strange last night in 3D. I wish I'd seen it in IMAX 3D. I think if you have a chance to see it in IMAX, do.
It's
actually a great movie. Surprisingly good.
Yeah, I'm going on Monday to my Dolby Cinema, which won't be in 3D, but it'll be in high dynamic
range. I hate 3D. I mean, every time I go, I think, oh, no, I should really watch it in 3D, and I always regret it. I hate wearing those cheesy glasses. It's darker than normal because of, you know, it cuts the light in half.
Cuts the light in more than half. Yeah, exactly.
And,
well, if you come down to see Billy Lynn, that will also be in 3D, but it will be in
much brighter
than you're used to. That's another thing that Ang Lee was very careful about, was that, you know, when these projectors, and they've got special projectors in the theater for this run, and they are
for 1 week.
Bright. Yeah, for 1 week. But they are really bright. And, you know, they're not digital cinema projectors. They're meant for things like theme park rides and simulators and stuff like that. So it's, you know, the 3D is nothing like you've seen before.
Yeah. I also yesterday spent some time in my cabinet, my home theater cabinet, because I, as you know, because you tested it and you calibrated my 4K LG display, which I'm loving. But, you know, I want to watch more 4K. So I'm converting everything to 4K. In fact, I posted an Instagram of my cabinet now. And I said, all of these devices are 4K except one. The receiver, the Xbox One S, an Apple TV, and the new Roku, Android Shield and the new TiVo Bolt Plus. All 4K except for Apple. And I have to say, Apple's starting to look a little, you know, antiquated.
A little tired.
A little tired at 1080p. Now, admittedly, most of the content I'm watching isn't 4K. But the new Roku, Ultra HD Roku, has a little 4K showcase so you can quickly find shows. And most of them are streaming at this point. Of course, I have a UHD Blu-ray player on the Xbox. Most of them are streaming at this point. And I watched a couple of things on Netflix, shows I probably would never watch because they're bad.
But you wanted to see what the 4K
They look phenomenal, even on streaming.
I know. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, the amazing thing, I just wrote a piece about how up till now I had thought, if you don't have a large enough screen, then 4K is useless. But at the SMPTE conference last week, I heard a talk that said, no, it's not useless because there are things in the picture called jaggies. You know, if you have a diagonal line that's close to vertical or close to horizontal but not quite, it can look kind of stair-steppy. With 4K, that becomes much less of an issue. And you can see that from across the room. You don't have to be able to see every pixel.
Yeah.
So I'm coming around. I changed my mind on this. I think 4K is now important, even at smaller screen sizes.
I've been a 4K promoter since I first saw one at CES almost a decade ago. I mean, it's been a long time. Remember, they used to bring those 4K displays in.
And it was a technology demonstration.
Video from NHK in Japan. And
I
remember looking at them, and they usually would be very detailed outdoor scenes.
Yep,
and it's just like looking through a picture window at something out the window.
Yep.
And thinking, forget 3D, forget any of these other things. Mm-hmm. If I could just get 4K, it really is vivid, and it really looks great.
Yeah. Not only is it more detailed, but and you don't have these jaggies and other artifacts, but it also has a wider, or if it's HDR anyway, it has a wider color gamut.
Right.
And so the pick colors are more vivid.
I do want to emphasize that, though. If you're buying a 4K set, get a UHD, right? That's the standard now, UHD.
Well, UHD is another, it's ultra high definition. It's another name for 4K. HDR is what you want.
But what is the designation for that? UHD Pro or something?
UHD
isn't there an industry premium?
Yeah.
There's an industry standard name for it, UHD Premium.
Right, which really refers to 4K, of course. 4K and UHD are synonymous in common usage. They're not technically synonymous.
Yeah, UHD is the correct designation. Actually.
Correct, that's right. UHD.
Ultra high def.
Right, but high dynamic range, HDR, that's what UHD Premium really talks about.
So get UHD Premium.
Yeah.
And I have the LG. Well, but boy, if you're going to buy a new set.
And you're going to invest that kind of money, absolutely.
You're going to want to get the latest standard, I think.
Yep. Totally agree.
But admittedly, there's not a lot of content. But more than
not
I thought.
Not yet.
It's coming. You could see, you could feel it coming. And the fact that I could buy a Roku now, a TiVo, an Xbox, an Android TV, and a receiver, of course. I had to get all new stuff. But the fact that I could get all that stuff with 4K capability
is
encouraging.
Right. And, you know, I just yesterday went down to Sony Pictures and they were doing a little demonstration from the Blu-ray Disc Association. And I learned that at the beginning of the year in January at CES, the Blu-ray Disc Association and the Ultra HD Association said, we're going to have 100 Ultra HD Blu-ray titles out by the end of the year. They're now at 90. So they're going to hit that goal.
Yeah. Yeah,
they're going to get 100.
I don't
discs.
Buy discs because I feel like the physical media is on the way out. But
I bought a few because
I wanted to see. But like I said, I think the streaming is pretty good, and there are a number of Amazon's doing some stuff that way. Netflix is. Vudu does. You pay a lot though if you do it on Vudu. You pay like a super premium for UHD HDR stuff.
Yeah, but, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's coming everywhere, but. Apple.
Everywhere but Apple. Apple seems behind the curve. And isn't that sometimes the case? I mean, Apple has...
I think it's often the case.
Often the case. Apple has been behind the curve, and they are here too. So I hope they sort of try to catch up a little bit. But in the meantime, we have these other devices,
you bet.
As you say.
My advice is get a Roku. That plays the most channels. And then if you're going to buy or rent TV or movies, do it on a Google, because then you can play it on YouTube, which means you can play it on an Apple TV as well as everything else. YouTube's pretty ubiquitous.
Ubiquitous. Totally ubiquitous. Yeah.
Anyway, that was just my homework for the my weekend, which was Thursday and Friday. I feel it all went very well. This new TiVo, I really love it. The Bolt Plus.
Oh, the Bolt. Did you get the Bolt Plus?
I did. That's the new one. You need that if you want 4K. 3 terabyte drive. Really like it. It's expensive because you have to subscribe for the channel guide. And I don't know what the future
is. Really nice.
It is. I mean, TiVo is clearly the best experience. I just don't know what the future is, because they were purchased, and I don't know what this company Rovi plans to do with them. And
we're in the era of corporate mergers.
It made me happy to bring that Xbox One in back to the Comcast store and say, thank you, goodbye. I'm all TiVo now, baby. Scott Wilkinson, he does a home theater show on our podcast network, twit.tv/HTG for home theater geeks. And he's at the AVS Forum. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, it's pretty fun. And then I asked a bonus question, because the question was, which of these devices is not 4K? And of all of them, well, except for the Sonos Connect, which is audio only, but all of them, only the Apple TV.
Only
and then the
Apple
bonus
TV.
Question is, how many of them have Netflix on them?
I would have to say all of them.
All of them, yep. Except for the Sonos, and the receiver doesn't have Netflix. But
the
second and third shelf all have Netflix. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different ways to watch Netflix, which is silly. Silly, silly, silly.
Yeah.
But I don't watch it on Apple TV anymore, because I can watch it on 4K now, which is nice.
Very nice.
Yeah.
You know, Mike Heiss in the chat room is saying that thanks to the politics of all this, the Sony Z9, their flagship, is not UHD premium, nor are the Vizios.
Oh.
So, you do have to look at that a little bit carefully. I do agree with you that UHD premium is a worthwhile thing to look for, no question about it. I didn't realize the Sony wasn't. I guess
That's
there are
shame.
Some politics.
Yeah, how about Battlecam saying, you want, if you look for UHD 10 plus Dolby vision, that's sufficient? Is that but that's not the same thing, is it?
Well, he's talking about HDR 10.
HDR 10, okay.
Yeah, there are two forms of high dynamic range, or HDR. One is called HDR 10 and the other is called Dolby Vision. There's a third one kind of making its way into things called HLG, but that's some way off, and it more relates to broadcasting. But in terms of HDR 10 and Dolby Vision, HDR 10 is an open standard. Anyone can do it. It's free to implement.
As opposed to UHD Premium.
Well, UHD Premium is different. UHD Premium says the TV should have at least this much peak light output and this kind of black level. And as long as it satisfies those conditions, whether or not it implements HDR 10 or Dolby Vision, it's HDR premium or UHD premium.
But does have to do some sort of HDR, right?
It does. It has to do HDR.
Does my TV?
Yes.
Now I don't know
yours
if I want to ask this question. Oh, good.
No. Yours does both. And I normally recommend that people get a TV that does both if they can afford it. Then there aren't very many. The LG OLEDs are among the few that do. The Vizio P series and M series is another one. Another set of TVs that does both, but not very many do. Most of them only implement HDR 10 because it's free.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what is mandated on Ultra HD Blu-ray discs. HDR 10, if you're going to do HDR, HDR 10 has to be there. Dolby Vision is an option.
Okay.
And it's also what's used mostly in streaming, HDR 10. Vudu does Dolby Vision, and there might be one or two others, but they're almost all HDR 10.
God, this stuff is so complicated.
I know.
I don't know why they do this to us. I guess because they can't agree on a standard.
Isn't that the way of it?
They want to do their own stupid standard.
Well, at least Dolby wants to do its own standard. And there are arguments, valid arguments, for saying that Dolby Vision is better.
Yeah.
But it's also expensive. You have to pay Dolby to license it. And it requires special hardware. You know, it's you got to have a chip in there that, that does it.
Yeah. Can you stick around for the top?
Sure, happy to.
All right. And you're not going to be here next week?
Correct.
Okay. And I will let you know about the, I guess I should let you know quickly because those tickets will sell out. I think I'm probably not going to come down for that. But
okay.
It's only one week. It's a tough week for me. So
it's if it's a tough week, then yeah I understand.
Yeah.
You might want to then consider taking the drive down to Fremont to go to the Dolby Cinema there.
You'll at least see it.
You'll see it in 2K, not right. 4K, but right. It'll be 120 frames per second, at least as far as I know. I'm still waiting on final confirmation from AMC.
All right. I'll hang in there. Thank you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. I'm going through all the different standards for TVs. It's crazy. That's why I'm always looking to say, well, just remember this, you know, UHD premium. But then Scott's explaining, well, there's two standards for HDR. There's there's HDR 10, and then there's Dolby Vision, and there's different. Why do they do this to us? Remember the old days? You go buy an RCA TV and you'd be done. They'd ask you one question: color or black and white? Okay, black. My dad would not buy a color TV. I remember when I was a kid. That's how old I am. He said they're not, the color's not realistic. I'm not buying one of them. Everybody looks pink. It's true. I wonder if you can buy a black and white TV today. I don't think so. 8888 Ask Leo. Back to the phones we go, and Addy in London. Wow, this is an international show. Hi, Addy.
Hey, Leo. Thank you so much for taking my call. This is Addyman423 from the chat room.
Yes, and we've talked before. It's great to talk to you once again.
Yeah, again, thanks for taking my call. So I'll just get straight to the point here. I am on the market for a mechanical keyboard, but I do have some very strict requirements here. I'm going to be using it for both work and gaming, but I have a very strict budget of about £100, which is around $120. So that means I can't go anywhere above that, not even by a pound. So, yeah.
I'll tell you what I use, and they do have versions under £100. I really like, first of all, we should explain what you want. Most keyboards nowadays, including the Apple keyboards, the laptop keyboards, are mushy. They have so the way a keyboard works is each key is a switch, right? You depress it, it makes a connection and tells a computer that switch has been pressed. The clicky or not clicky we're talking about is merely the kind of switch that it uses. And modern keyboards use plastic dome switches. They're kind of soft. So they go, they don't make, and most people want that. In fact, that's what I use because otherwise you'd hear me clickety clacking. But the old IBM PCs, the early days of PCs, they used mechanical switches that were called buckling spring switches. They were hard metal switches and they'd go click and they'd have a long travel. And a lot of people prefer those partly for nostalgia, but also because it's better, in some say, for ergonomics. You're less likely to have RSI. And gamers who are tapping, really like that feeling that I hit the switch, I hit the button. And I think it's true that I'm more accurate with mechanical switch keys if you get used to them. There's a company that has become quite famous for making these switches. You know, the original IBM keyboards. Yeah, Cherry. The original IBM keyboards were Northgate, I think, or OmniGate. I can't remember the name. And I think that you could still find them, believe it or not. Aficionados sell them on eBay and things. But modern people are using the Cherry key switches, which I think are quite good. So almost any clicky keyboard you look at these days will have Cherry mechanical switches in them. And then Cherry themselves make different colors. This is how crazy it's gotten, depending on how much physicality you want in the key switch. So, you know, it's if you can, it's a good idea to try these before you buy. I don't know if have you chosen? You want cherry red, cherry green? What do you want?
No, I mean I literally decided like yesterday or day before that I wanted a mechanical keyboard because I'm thinking if I'm doing a lot of coding at the moment or I'm doing a lot of gaming, I want something that, you know, that has that speed but yet still fits within my very strict £100 budget.
Yeah. They have red, black, blue, brown.
Right.
The most common clickies are the blues. I think the reds are the clickiest. Cherry red is what a lot of they're relatively new, and a lot of it's tied to the actuation force, how hard you have to push it, and then the other side of it is how much travel there is. This is crazy, but if you want to read up on it, KeyboardCo.com, which sells keyboards, has a introduction to cherry switches so that you can see which one you want to get. Anyway, to answer your question, the keyboard I ended up getting is from a company called Das Keyboard, DASKeyboard.com. They have a variety of them, and some of them are less expensive. I see one for $99 US. That's their compact mechanical keyboard. It's on sale right now.
Does that have the 10 key feature? Because I sometimes do tend to use the keypad.
It does not. That's what compact means. It doesn't have a keypad, and that's where you're saving money. Yeah. One of the things I like about these DOS keyboards is they have USB ports on them. I like to put my mouse in my keyboard. I also like having a USB port there, and these have two, so that I can put a card reader or something else in there. Usually they're USB 2, though. They're not very fast, but at least they're there. I would at least go look and see if you can find a sale on a DOS keyboard with, $138 US for refurbished with the number keypad. They tend to be expensive.
Ooh, okay.
Here's $112 US. So, yeah, they sell refurbs too, so that might be a way to save. But I do love the cherry key switches. They're really good.
Yeah, now in terms of that, I mean, I don't know if you have any experience in this area as well, but I know that Razer and Corsair are really reputable brands as well. So
yes.
SteelSeries.
They tend to be – the SteelSeries is excellent. They tend to be gamer-focused, so yes, of course, they're going to have and they'll be Cherry switches. So really, as long as they're Cherry MX switches – The feel is going to be the same. You're really looking at additional features, price, things like that. So if you can find Crucial or Razer with a Cherry MX switch that you like, then absolutely go with that.
Okay, so either Crucial, Corsair, or Razer would be a good choice then.
Yeah, and I do like that, as I said, the DOS keyboard is what I use at home. It's loud. That's the only thing to be aware of is we're not used to loud keyboards anymore. All the modern keyboards are mushy. In fact, that's the real – it's controversy going on about these new Apple laptops. I haven't tried the new ones yet, the MacBook Pros. They'll be in stores, I think, in a week or so. And before I buy it, I want to try it because I do not like the very short travel keyboards that Apple puts in its MacBook. I find I cannot, even after a year of use, type accurately on those. So a keyboard's important. If you do a lot of key entry, if you type a lot, Or if you're an accountant and use the number keypad, that's really important.
Right.
So I would, I would be comfortable with any of those brands you recommended. But as I said, I ended up getting a DOS keyboard. I use a Razer mouse with my DOS keyboard. Razer makes very good stuff, R-A-Z-E-R. They're gaming focused.
Right.
Yeah.
And there is one other thing I've thought of, which is more on the slightly funnier side. I was thinking that if I do go for a keyboard with a cherry switch in it,
yeah,
I feel that the rest of my day will be fruitful.
Well, it is November, you know, and this is the NaNoWriMo month, where many people all over the world are writing novels in the month of November. And you can go to NaNoWriMo and put up your stats, how many words you wrote each day and so forth. It's a way to encourage a lot of writing. So I don't know if you're a writer. What do you type? What kinds of things? Are you a student?
Sort of. I'm actually doing Harvard University's CS50, which is a computer science course.
Yeah.
It's an online course available through
Isn't that awesome? What a great, yeah. It's great that you're able to take that in London. That's fantastic. Yeah, coders are typers too. A lot of typing if you're writing computer programs. You don't get to 5 million lines of code without some typing. Adi, great to talk to you. I'll see you in the chat room. Stoic Squirrel in our chat room likes his Corsair K70 with Cherry MX Brown switches. There's a recommendation. I can't remember. I think I got the reds because I think the reds are the most clicky. I can't remember, though. I'll have to look it up.
All right.
Hey, enjoy your new keyboard. Can you believe we just spent 10 minutes talking about keyboards and key switches? But if you think about it, we spend so much time talking about processors and memory and storage, but how do you interface with a computer? Screen and keyboard. The screen and keyboard is probably the most important thing on a computer anyway. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. The website, techguylabs.com. Call in with your comments, your recommendations. What's your favorite keyboard? Remember the old IBM Northgates? 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You're out.
Brown is in the middle. Which is the clickiest? Is it red? Our show today, brought to you by Quicken Loans. Quicken Loans wants to speak to you, the geek. Yes, you're... Come on, you know it. You're a geek because you listen to this show, you're a geek. Because you listen to this podcast, you're a geek. And they want to reach you because they've created a product for you and me. We're people who don't want to go into a loan office to get a home mortgage. We want something easy, fast, completely online. And that's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgages for you and me. It's quickenloans.com/tech guy. The name of the product is Rocket Mortgage. And the idea is you could do the whole thing completely online. You don't have to, you submit pay stubs and bank statements with a push of a button. You don't even have to get up from the couch. You can do it on your phone or on your tablet. quickenloans.com/tech guy. Check it out today. If you're ready to refi or buy a new home, this is such a great solution. And it's completely, and by the way, because you're, you know, interfacing with their system by going to quickenloans.com/tech guy, they can get you the approval in minutes, and it's a custom solution that's just right for you. And that's why you could actually, you know what, you could put this on, you could do this. You go to an open house today, tomorrow, go to the open house. Hey, I want this. I want this house. You just go to quickenloans.com/tech guy, and within minutes, you can show the realtor, hey, I just got approved for a loan. Can I have this house? I love it. quickenloans.com/tech guy. No more stacks of old paper. No more visits to the mortgage office. In fact, when it comes time to sign the loan, they send a notary to you with all the paperwork, so you don't even have to get out of the house. Equal housing lender license in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. I found that out. We were talking to Brad Sams, and he just got a loan from Rocket Mortgage. He said it was awesome. Didn't even have to leave the house. quickenloans.com/tech guy to refi, to buy Rocket Mortgage. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support for our podcast. All right, Scotty Wilkinson.
It's here, introducing Epson.
Let's turn off Leo. I'm bored with him anyway. And get
never.
Your shot all set up here. Well, I have to go home with him every day, so. There you go. There you go.
Hi, thank you. And my number. Oh, that's so handy.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Enjoy.
Have a good break there. So, hey, everybody. Happy to be here with you. been talking about a variety of things here. I want to make sure everybody understands that Ultra HD Premium is a certification by the Ultra HD Alliance. And in order to get that certification, a manufacturer needs to submit its TV to the Alliance for independent testing. They hire a testing facility to test these TVs to make sure that they meet certain specifications for peak brightness, for black level, and several other characteristics. And they have to be 4K, of course. And so they, you know, if a TV is certified, then that UHD premium certified. That means the manufacturer submitted it, UHD Alliance tested it, found it to comply with its specifications for that certification, and it got certified. If a manufacturer does not submit its TV to the UHD Alliance for certification, then it's not going to be UHD premium. But that doesn't mean that the TV will not necessarily won't have those performance specs. It may very well. But the TV manufacturer just said, "Eh, we don't want to deal with that. We don't need that. We don't think it's important or whatever." And they're just going to say, "Okay, we're just going to put our TV out." So without that with that certification, you know that it meets certain performance specs. Without it, you don't know. It might, but it might not. There's no way to tell unless you actually measure it and do the testing yourself to see if it does. And that requires some pretty expensive equipment and so on and so forth. So it's not necessarily easy to do. Presumably, if you read reviews, then they will tell you if it meets, if it reaches this peak brightness, if it gets to this black level, and so on. And if it does, then it doesn't really need certification. The only thing certification really does is it, as Leo has said, it gives consumers the assurance that it meets those specifications. And that's really what it does. And so I wanted to make sure everybody did understand that. Hey, Loquacious, good to see you, as always, in the chat room. I was reading a few things in the chat room there. Are you a painter? Are you an artist? I would love to see your work sometime. Beatmaster, yes, it's kind of like THX certification, in a sense. Again, THX certification, which actually applies to TVs and to audio, to video and to audio, means that it has passed THX's tests. And THX tests are very comprehensive. In the audio realm, on the video realm, there's like 400 tests that they perform on the TV. In the audio realm, I don't remember what it is, but it's similar to that. Tinker Toy Tech, how you doing? Let's see here. Oh yeah, Battlecam is talking about the Sony streaming service, which is called Ultra, I believe. And you can only get Sony movies there. And, you know, that's, I should have asked the Sony folks yesterday. I was down at Sony Pictures talking about Ultra HD Blu-ray and the difference between that and streaming. And there is a difference. It's certainly in terms of quality. The streaming will give you, there's different ways to think about, but basically I'm trying to think about bandwidth. You know, how much bit rate do you have coming into your house and available for streaming? And for Ultra HD high dynamic range, you need something on the order of 20-25 megabits coming in. And Netflix and others have actually tried to measure what people are actually getting and made available to them, and it's more like 3 or 4. Whereas on a Ultra HD Blu-ray disc, you're talking 50 to 100 megabits per second. So you're obviously going to get better quality. And that was one of their main points. And I agree. Leo's comments about the, you know, physical media disappearing notwithstanding. Yes, streaming is becoming more popular. But I learned yesterday that the Blu-ray market is actually up year over year compared to last year. So it's not dying yet. And being the guy I am and the editor of AVS Forum, where quality is the ultimate, the ultimate goal, then physical media for us is still very important because of the quality of the audio, the quality of the video, the presence of bonus features. If you're into that, you don't get those in streaming. So, you know, there still is a place for discs, certainly in my opinion. Web0183, is there a list of theaters showing Billy Lynn in 2K HFR? Yes, that list is the list of Dolby Cinemas. And I'm still awaiting final confirmation from AMC, which runs all the Dolby Cinemas in the U.S., that they will be showing it in 2K high frame rate, 120 frames per second, which is how I saw it at a private Dolby Cinema. And I'm presuming that they are going to show it that way in the public Dolby Cinemas. And that list is on avsforum.com. Just have to go there and go under features and then under that commercial cinema, and you will find an article called List of Dolby Vision or Dolby Cinema Theaters, something like that. And there will be the list of all the theaters in all the states and around the world, too. There are some in Europe as well. And so that's where to see Billy Lynn if you're not in L.A. next week or New York. Matt Genius says they stopped selling Blu-ray players in one UK store. That's kind of interesting. But are they selling Ultra HD Blu-ray players? I mean, Blu-ray players have gone down into the, certainly they're in the commodity area now. They're, you can get them for $50, easy. Whereas Ultra HD Blu-ray players are in the $300 to $700 range. But, you know, the first Blu-ray players, when they came out 10 years ago, that was $1,000. So already Ultra HD Blu-ray is being introduced to the market at much lower than Blu-ray was 10 years ago. Let's see. Oh, Jeppo is asking about the Le Mall, actually Le Echo 85-inch TV. I haven't heard anything about it yet, but it looks pretty exciting. 85-inch, full-array backlit, Ultra HD.
Nice.
HDR for $5,000.
Yeah.
$4,000 if you buy it, you know, within a certain time frame.
All right, Scotty. Have a great one.
Thanks, you
too. Take 2 weeks. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks. Thanks so much.
All righty. Bye-bye. I must have knocked this camera. I think two got knocked. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches, virtual reality, Ultra HD TVs, self-driving vehicles, and all that jazz. 8888, ask Leo. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, although our callers have been from England and Israel so far. We'll get some more American callers, I'm sure. 888-ASK-LEO. I love them from all over. If you are outside the U.S. or Canada, you can call via Skype or some sort of voice over the internet, and it should be a free call because you're calling a toll-free number. Matthew is in Brightwood, California. He's next. Hi, Matthew.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you. So I've gotten accepted into a physician assistant program.
Congratulations. That's exciting. How long is that program?
It's 2.5 years.
Great. It's not a nurse. It's a physician's assistant. What does that mean?
Yeah, physician assistant, you're a mid-level practitioner where you're seeing patients, writing prescriptions.
Ah.
You still have a physician oversight, so there's a doctor somewhere either in your clinic or available by phone.
That's really cool. And I think there's more of those. I know nurse practitioners are becoming widely used in a lot of areas because you can provide primary care at a lower cost.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. It's providing the care without coming from a nursing background. So I'm coming from a paramedic background.
Ah, so are you a paramedic right now?
Yes, I am.
EMT? Oh, that's exciting. That's great. You guys, boy, you're brave. I'll tell you. Oh, man. Anyway, what can I do to help you in your new career? That's exciting.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm looking to upgrade computers. I'm currently using a MacBook Pro that's about 4 years old.
Okay.
And I'm looking at switching to Windows-based, and the programs told us that we should try and get away from writing paper notes. So it's going to be digital note-taking, and I really like the idea of writing on screen.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the Surface Book.
Excellent. Love the Surface Book.
And it's really just kind of an opinion of, is that going to be sufficient for my needs? I mean,
I'll just give you some choices so you can look at some others. I think the Surface is fantastic. That's Microsoft's Windows 10 machine. It's a little strange because it's a tablet, basically, with an attachable keyboard. I don't feel like it's quite a laptop. in that sense. Because the keyboard, and there are two kinds, I would recommend the type keyboard, which is more like a real keyboard. It's still kind of plasticky, weird. It's not plasticky, but it's not like real. I don't know how to describe it.
Okay.
You should try before you buy. Let's put it that way. Especially if you're going to be typing a lot. Now, for notes, it's great because it comes with a stylus. You can use OneNote or other programs. OneNote is probably the one you'd use. That's Microsoft's Office note-taking program. The nice thing about the Surface, it's tightly integrated to OneNote. You click the eraser on the pen, and it launches OneNote. You know, it's really made for note-taking like that. But there are other – what we call that is a two-in-one, a tablet slash laptop, and there are many of these. If you want one with a more physical keyboard, you might look at Lenovo's Yoga family.
Okay.
The Yogas are two-in-ones as well. You can detach the screen, kind of like the Surface Book from Microsoft. On others, you just flip the screen all the way around. And so it turns into a tablet because the screen's now on the, you know, on the top, sort of,
right?
And the keyboard's underneath. It just depends on how you like it. And frankly, and they, by the way, they have this new weird yoga book that has a glass screen keyboard, which is they call it the Halo keyboard. It's an interesting product. They have a keyboard as well. I would just look at it just to see if you like it. But I think really the class act, it's also less expensive. Microsoft charges a premium for the Surface. But you bought Mac, so you're used to that. It's very similar. They're the class act in two-in-ones, and it comes from Microsoft, et cetera, et cetera. But they're not cheap. You'll be getting a Surface Pro 4 because the 3s, I think, are gone now. They've sold those out. So they stopped making them a while ago. So, you know, it's not going to be cheap. They did not update that computer. I expect an update in a couple of months, early next year. Nevertheless, still a very nice Windows 10 laptop. And if you're taking notes on a screen with a pen, is that what you expect to do?
Yeah, that's and mostly for like PowerPoints to be able to just write notes directly on the PowerPoint.
Nice. Yeah, that's a really nice way to operate. I don't think you can go far wrong with this, with the Surface, but do take a look at the Lenovo Yoga family, Acer and Asus and others make. What you're going to be looking at is two-in-ones. That's that category. And there are many companies that make two-in-ones. And so, you know, if you look at some others, just to reassure yourself that you're getting the one that you like the best.
Right. And processor-wise, they should be more than sufficient.
For yeah. You're not playing. You know, games are what pushes a processor or 3D modeling, stuff like that. You're using it for word processing, note-taking. You know, you're using it as a student. Yeah. No.
Perfect.
Simple. But you probably will want to use OneNote. I think that's a great program for that.
Yeah.
Hey, congratulations. Perfect. Good luck with your new
thank
career.
Thank you very much.
That's great. That's fantastic. Steve, Beaumont, California. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Leo. I've got a Dell laptop that I've had ever since Windows 7 came out, and I've kept 7 because I guess I'm not eligible. Whatever, never mind.
Nothing wrong with it. 7's great. Good version.
Maybe I've switched to Mac, but I keep this one around because I use it to program my Crestron system at home.
Right, and you need it. Yep.
But I'm actually using it now because I have 300 or so DVDs that I'm now decrypting and ripping to a hard drive that I'll access through my Roku. And so I've got an external Blu-ray disc that's plugged in, and I've got a hard drive that's plugged in. But I'm doing disk after disk after disk, first ripping it and then using Handbrake to convert it to H.264.
Mm-hmm.
So am I wearing out this computer?
And that's a great question, but I have to take a break. Hang on. I love it. Yes, in a way. Yes and no. But we'll give you the answer when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's such a good question.
You're out.
Thank you.
Huh?
Sure, you can wear out a keyboard. Yeah. Anything that moves, the answer is anything that moves can be worn out. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Steve asks a great question in Beaumont, California. Can you wear a computer out? And the kind of the short answer is, of course, anything that's got moving pieces can wear out. Keyboard, hard drive, Blu-ray drive, the disk burner that you're using. Chips can wear out, too. In fact, motherboards, chips, video cards, they wear out, but they wear out because of environmental conditions. So thermal problems, heating and cooling sometimes can cause problems. And torquing. So laptops often wear out faster than desktops because they're being carried around and sometimes get twisted. And so we've seen laptops fail because the motherboard, the logic board inside the laptop, it gets twisted a little bit, and that can cause connections to fail. What you're doing, which is ripping disk after disk after disk, is probably not going to wear it out. I mean, it'll wear out faster, but you probably could do that thousands of times without wearing it out. Blu-ray drives tend to happen with misalignment of the laser that's burning, and that comes from knocking them or mishandling of them. If they're treated gently, that's not going to happen. And from dirt and dust. And I don't think you're introducing more dirt and dust than just sitting there. So I think using it is probably better in the long run than not using it.
All right. Well, it's an external drive, so it's not the internal drive on the laptop.
I think you're probably – I think, you know, you should be able to do that again and again. Eventually, you'll wear – you know, what's unfortunate, a lot of these new a lot of disk burners and stuff – are made with plastic gears. If you opened it up and you'd see the mechanisms in there, they're often plastic, which is, of course, a terrible choice and is going to wear faster than metal. But I think you could probably, it probably has a duty cycle of several thousand disks.
Great. Can I ask one quick question about an email address?
Yes.
I left Verizon Fios when they switched to
Frontier.
What
a nightmare that's been.
So I ended up with a better deal with Time Warner Cable, which of course is now something Spectrum.
Spectrum, congratulations.
Right. So I have a
deregulation. Isn't it wonderful?
Yeah, right. So I have an email address that's at Verizon.net.
Yeah, which is probably pointing to a AOL or a Yahoo.
Yeah, go to AOL to get to the server.
Yeah, so it's AOL.
Am I going to lose that at some point because I don't pay Verizon or?
Yeah, I think I don't know what Frontier. Does anybody know what Frontier uses as a mail provider? So internet service providers in the good old days, I remember, would run their own servers, right? But then Verizon and a few others decided, why are we running our own servers? Let's just use Yahoo Mail, or that's what AT&T uses, or let's use AOL Mail. That's Verizon bought them. So, and I think in the long run, they're probably going to give you a transition period. But I suspect Frontier will do something else. Maybe not. Maybe they'll do a deal with AOL. We don't know.
Well, I don't have Frontier either. I mean
Spectrum. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay.
Because Time Warner had it. Time Warner did run its own email, I think, with Roadrunner. I seem to remember. Roadrunner had its own. I can't remember. You know, it's so crazy. Spectrum hasn't said anything to this point that they want to move you?
Nobody has told me anything about anything.
Of course not.
Surprise.
So here's what you could do prophylactically, kind of ahead of time, proactively, first thing I would do, the real pain in moving email servers comes from telling all your friends,
yes,
email me at a new address.
Yes.
And my recommendation on that is to get your own address. That way, it doesn't matter who you use. If you get your own domain name and address, and it's not expensive, it's under $10 a month, you can then forward it to a provider. And if you decide, I'm going to change providers, you just change the forwarding. Nobody's the wiser. So if you went to a registrar, you know, Google does this. We have a sponsor, Hover, that does it.
Mm-hmm.
And you got, you know, BeaumontSteve.com. And told everybody, and you're going to do this once, just one pain point. But here's why you want to do this now. Please email me at my new address, steve@beaumontsteve.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then from then on, you can have it forward to Gmail. I like Gmail. Now, if you want to do this now, one thing you could do is get a Gmail account. You have it in control.
I just don't use it.
Right. But what you can do is set the Gmail account up to fetch your mail from your current provider, AOL, on a schedule. Gmail will do that. AOL might also do forwarding, but I trust Gmail. See, this happened with Yahoo. Yahoo briefly turned off email forwarding, and everybody thought, well, it's just they want to trap everybody in Yahoo mail. You can't get out of it. They said, no, it was a mistake, and they backed out once they were caught. But they can't prevent you from getting your own mail. And so you could tell Gmail, hey, just, you know, every day go get my mail off the Verizon server, the Spectrum server, or the AOL server, whoever it is today, get my mail. And in that way, it'll all show up in that inbox in your Gmail account. You can even do filtering based on, you know, you could have a Verizon folder or a Spectrum folder.
I see. Okay.
So I would do that since you already have the Gmail account. And then if you want to really avoid this ever again, I mean, at some point, you're going to want to tell people, here's my new address, so you don't have to perpetually get your email from AOL or whoever they moved to. Then before I did that, I would go out and get a custom domain and have that email forward to your Gmail account.
So who's the cheapest on that?
You know, it's all about $10 a year. It's cheap. Some give you free email forwarding. Some charge you for email forwarding. You don't want to get email service from them. So forwarding merely means somebody sends an email to steve@beaumontsteve.com and it just bounces off of hover.com or whoever it is to Gmail. It just goes boing. But they try to get you often to pay for email hosting, which means that you have an email server at Hover or Google Domains or wherever. You don't want to do that. That costs $5-6 a month.
Oh, okay.
So what you just want is email forwarding, and most people will give you free email forwarding. I think Google Domains is as cheap as you can get right now.
And then I'll be able to establish a unique at, like, steve.com.
Yeah.
Okay.
And in fact, most of these guys, you say, just forward anything that comes to BeaumontSteve.com, forward it, and then you can have it be Steve, spam, newsletters, work, whatever, at BeaumontSteve.com, and then filter it at Gmail based on what that is.
Do you recommend a particular forwarding company?
I would look at Google Domains, frankly, and see. I think they're very cheap. See what I don't remember. Hover, I think, does forwarding. Hover.com is our sponsor, I should say, and that's who I use for all my domain names. They have the broadest variety of domain names. They have, because they have dot, all sorts of dot weird stuff, like dot biz, dot zone, dot Republican, dot Democrat. They have all sorts of weird. So, you know, you shop around. Hover's a good one. Google Domains is another one. I don't recommend GoDaddy. Names.com, somebody's mentioning. I used to use Dotster for years. Dotster.
Well, could I use my full name?
If nobody else has it, you bet. I use my full name. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The podcast today brought to you by Atlassian, and in more ways than one. And yeah, they're an advertiser, but also we use their products like crazy. We use Jira when we were designing the website, and the team in Austin, and we, you know, they would have, we did the user stories, and we would do the breakdown, and you'd have the little things, and you'd move it over from column to column, and that was how we kept track of everything, stayed in touch. You could see the burn down rate. We'd do the 2-week sprints. It was amazing. I loved it. And then we found out, well, there's also HipChat, because we started using that to talk with them. That's a messaging program. By now, we're like in a whole Jira house. We still use HipChat all the time to keep track of processes. The sales department uses, the engineering department, the programming department, the booking department. We use HipChat like crazy. It's how we stay in touch here. I didn't know this, but our IT department's been using Atlassian's Confluence as a way to kind of document workflow and what's going on. Well, now they've got a new tool, the Jira Service Desk from Atlassian. This is built on the Jira platform, and it's designed for IT teams and support teams. It starts at $10 a month, And it is a great way to give your customers an easy way to ask for help, or, you know, your employees. You can stay on top of service level agreements because you can have dynamic queues and mobile alerts. So if, you know, somebody's got a SLA, they can get fast help. Your agents will be more productive from putting out fires to help employees get stuff done. And they love it. And I have to say, every time we talk about Jira Service Desk, the people in the chat room said, oh, you know, I'm using that other guy's stuff. It's terrible. You will love it. If you are using some other service solution, this is the one you want. Because it's built on Jira. Atlassian really makes good stuff. Our IT department has started using it to track projects and tasks assigned to every project as it moves from, you know, it's those lanes from concept to implementation of the final product. We use it. We customize it. So we got swim lanes and have a Kanban board, right? Real-time visualizations. That's one of the things I loved about Jira was the burn down and all of that. You get all of that. Once a task is completed, the ticket gets slid over to the completed column. I guess it's that direction. That's nice. I love that. And it works with HipChat. You can get notifications from Jira Service Desk into HipChat and vice versa. Easy to set up. Very affordable. You won't even need your boss's approval. In fact, your boss will say, wow, I don't know what you're doing, but keep it up. We're getting great service from our IT department. Jira Service Desk. You find out more and try it free at Atlassian.com/twit. A-T-L-A-S-S-I-A-N. Atlassian.com/twit. And they've got a deal. Actually, let me show you the t-shirt that they're doing. Because the first 100 people will sign up right now. Just for the free trial. You don't have to buy it. Just sign up for the free trial. We'll get this fabulous Jira Service Desk t-shirt at Atlassian.com/twit. They got it says it's like the Konami code. Up, up, down, down, left, right, A, B. Start. It's BA. I see. I never get it right. It's BA. Oh, for your IT team. I love that. See why over 20,000 IT teams are using and loving Jira Service Desk right now. 7-day trial awaits at Atlassian.com/twit. What's up? How's the baby?
Baby's doing well. Good. He's feeding upstairs.
Good. Good, good.
And I'm getting ready for another trip.
Where are you going?
Actually, so next Saturday I will be on a cruise ship, but I'm not sure if I will have a signal. So we could either do it Sunday or I can email you from the ship on Friday.
Sunday's fine. Are you going to be back on Sunday?
Yep.
We'll do it Sunday then. That way you don't have to worry about it. What ship are you going to be on?
That's a secret.
You're so cagey. So we decided to go and booked because, you know, Michael's been in year-round school till now. He's in eighth grade. He'll be, for the first time in his life, getting summer off. So we thought, oh, crap, we better keep him busy. So we're going to do, right after he gets out of school, we're going to take him to the Galapagos.
Awesome. That with National Geographic?
No, that's what Jane suggested, Lindblad. Jane suggested, yeah. Lindblad. I looked at it, and they didn't have any double beds. Because it's an expedition ship, right?
Right.
So it's like, Lisa said, I'm not going on a boat where I can't sleep in bed with you. So Jane had also said that she liked Abercrombie and Fitch, I think.
Yeah. Abercrombie and Kent.
Kent. Yeah, not Fitch.
Yeah.
And Silver Sea.
Can't go wrong with those guys.
Yeah. So we looked at Silver Sea, and we ended up going with Silver Sea because they have double beds.
Okay.
which is, I know, silly, but it looks kind of, actually looks great. She said it doesn't really matter excursion-wise because it's the same tour. It's the same guides for all of them. It's Galapagos guides, not. So it doesn't matter so much in that regard. You're going to have a similar experience.
And I don't think they have internet, by the way.
They do. So,
they do. Okay.
Lindblad does not.
Lindblad does not.
Lindblad does not. Silver Sea does. That was another consideration.
Okay, because that's why I didn't go with them.
Yeah. No, this is like Lindblad is like old fashioned, but that was okay. I was because they'd started, and then we're gonna do the Machu Picchu extension ahead of time. So we're gonna go to Machu Picchu.
Lucky
and then,
man.
I know. I can't wait. That's in June. I can't wait. So, and I wanted to try Silver Seas, although I know this isn't the same as their cruises. This is an expedition cruise, but
right.
I'd wanted to try them because, as you know, I'm shopping, shopping cruise lines.
So I got a, we can either talk about how to find cheap Thanksgiving flights.
Good. We've done it like that.
Before.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll just do that. That will take.
Okay. Okay.
I won't get through it all, but we can start with that.
Dealio. So, yeah, I can't wait. I've been to Machu Picchu, but I've never been to the Galapagos.
Good man.
But Lisa and Mike, I thought this is an educational trip for Michael.
Without a doubt.
I thought he would like, and we're going to bring his cousin, because here we go. Hold on. Johnny Jet, proud papa, is here. Little Jackie Jet is what, 3 weeks old now? How many weeks old is he?
He's 7 weeks.
Seven already?
Yes.
They grow up so fast.
They really do.
Congratulations. To you and
I finally found paradise. I used to think it was a tropical island. It really is.
Yeah.
You know, last night I had Jack on my chest.
That's it. That's the one. Do that while you can, because in a couple of weeks, he won't want to do that anymore. It'd be too big. But isn't that nice? That is. That's the tropical paradise. Your baby really sleeping is on your chest. It's very nice.
It is.
So I imagine this year everybody's coming to you for Thanksgiving.
Correct.
Yeah.
But I know, I usually try to take Thanksgiving off because I travel so much, and Thanksgiving usually brings out a lot of the,
Is it the busiest? It is, isn't it? The busiest few days?
Well, actually, no, the summer times are, there's actually busier times in the summer.
Okay.
But Thanksgiving, usually the Wednesday before and the Sunday after are definitely in the top 10.
And that's important because you got to allow extra time for the security lines, right?
For sure.
And it's going to be harder to get a ticket. Is it too late to get a good ticket for Thanksgiving?
It's not too late, but, hopefully people are flying, they already bought their tickets. It's getting late now, but it's not too late.
Do they gouge people now because they know you're desperate and it's getting close and all of that?
I mean, if you ran a business and you knew everyone was going to wanted to fly on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving and the Sunday after – would you offer a discount? You probably wouldn't.
Not a discount. No, I guess
so. That's
right.
What these guys are doing. They're not. Yeah. They're offering, top dollar. But if you're flexible.
Well, I wouldn't raise my prices either.
Well, it's all on the supply and demand. So it doesn't work that way. But, for the low fare carriers, if you buy your tickets far in advance, then you'll get the best deals. So, but if you haven't done it, this is how you can save some money this Thanksgiving when you fly. Just be flexible. Leave the day before and return, the day before Sunday or the Saturday or even the Monday late afternoon.
If you flew on Thanksgiving Day, would it be cheap?
Sometimes it's actually people have caught on to that. So, in the early morning, it's not that cheap. But if you fly, in the afternoon, you can find really good deals. So, and last year I actually flew the Friday after Thanksgiving and it was like a ghost town and I was able to use miles for my wife and her mother. But you can't use them, I couldn't use them the day before or Wednesday. So my thing is use your vacation days wisely. And I created a whole 10 points on my website, which with screenshots, and I did some examples of New York to Miami, which is very popular. And you can just see that if you flew on the Wednesday, it would be $532. But if you left a day later, it would be $262 round trip. So just by being flexible, you can save serious money. And if you're a family of four, it might be worth taking the time off. Yeah, and I know kids are in school and all that stuff, but you have to figure out.
But that's why it's cheaper, because people aren't going to fly on a school day.
Right.
I like to do that. All right. So
And I also recommend don't putting in the time of day. When you go into these search engines like Expedia or Orbitz or whatever, don't put in, I want to leave at 5 p.m. Just leave it blank anytime because it will show what's available. If there's an early morning flight, you might be willing to get up early or to take the day off just to save a lot of money. And I also highly recommend alternate airports. We've talked about this before. So let's say you are flying from New York to Miami. Don't just look at Miami. Look at Fort Lauderdale. It's usually a lot cheaper. It's only 25 miles. Every major city has alternate airports. Los Angeles, you don't have to just look at LAX. You can look at Long Beach. You can look at Orange County, San Francisco. You look at Oakland or San Jose. So there's
– my favorite's Burbank. Easy in, easy out, great airport, right? Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, but it's usually not cheaper. LAX seems to be the cheapest because there's so much competition.
Yeah.
But it all depends where you're traveling to. So that's another consideration.
Just made me think, is it all right to use Orbitz and Expedia? I mean, are you going to get the best prices from them, or would they be somewhere better to go?
So this is what I do when I book my travel.
Yeah, what do you do, Johnny?
Obviously, I go to my website. I have a search tool on there, and it opens up different windows,
right?
Including Travelocity and TripAdvisor, all these different sites. So I price them out and also use Google Flights, which is very, very good. And I price it all out, and I find out what's the cheapest one. And if then I go to that airline directly, and I find out if it's the same price.
Oh,
if it is,
yeah,
I'll book directly with the airline. If it's not, then I'll consider the third.
Fortunately,
part.
Shopping around is easier thanks to the internet than it used to be. You really can do all that.
Oh, big time.
JohnnyJet.com. He's got that thing there that does that thing.
And you also have to keep in mind of Southwest Airlines. You cannot find their fares on anyone's site, any third party, except their site. So you have to go to Southwest.com. So if they're flying in a market, look at them, especially if you're checking bags, because you'll save money since, you know, a round trip. Check bags for two round trip is like $120.
See, they hide those fees. That's how they get you. Other air carriers. There's all these, you know, like Spirit. Like Spirit charge you for everything. Everything.
That's why one of my tips on here is to stay away from the low fare carriers unless you know exactly what you're getting into. If you can fly without checking a bag, even carrying a bag on, they charge. Last minute, some of these guys charge $100 to put a bag in the overhead bin. So you have to know.
Can you believe that? Is that horrible?
It is. And
but that way their price online looks low because they know they're going to get you for an extra $100 when you bring your bag.
You see New York to Miami's, you know, $59 on Spirit. Everyone else is $99. So you're like, I'm going to take Spirit. And then all of a sudden you get hit hard. Unless you can fly practically naked, don't care what seat you have.
You got to know what you're doing. If you're going to go the Allegiant, Spirit, Frontier, those low-cost airlines, you got to know what you're doing.
But they have a loyal following. That's people who actually know how to fly. They don't care about leg space.
Yeah, they figured it out.
Wow Airlines is a great example. They fly to Europe so cheap. I just saw a deal right now, $299 or $279
from
New York to London, including all taxes. But you have to go through Iceland. And again, you can't check any bags unless you want to pay some big money.
We used to do that when I was a kid. You'd go Icelandic Airlines.
And Icelandic Air has great deals, and they also offer free stopovers.
Yeah, you get to stop in Reykjavik.
And that's a good point. Hey, I like Reykjavik.
No, nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying, if that's where
you do a long layover, they'll give you a free trip to the Blue Lagoon, which is only 20 minutes away. And
nice.
It's, you know, that's a great little layover.
That's not the same Blue Lagoon as Brooke Shields. And
that was Fiji.
This is the cold, the ice Blue Lagoon.
But it's still an experience.
Okay, just want people to know it ain't gonna be. You're not gonna be in a bikini in the Blue Lagoon.
That's for sure.
All right. Fare alerts, you like those?
I do. I mean, you can always – instead, I prefer actually to keep searching, and I do it every day.
So you do your own fare alert in effect.
I do, but you can sign up to different websites. Where
TripIt does that. If I have TripIt Pro, and they'll let me know if I could get a seat cheaper than the one I bought, which I like.
Right. TripIt Pro is great.
Yeah, yeah.
And I like Kayak. Yep. Airfare Watchdog does a really good job. So, you know, you just put in your city pairs, your dates, the price you want to pay, and they'll send you an email if the price drops below that.
Now, I see here you say use frequent flyers, but every time I try on a holiday, they go, oh, sorry, there's an exception. You can't use them here.
Well, that's why I said you have to be flexible, like leave the Friday after Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Or,
right.
You know, I put in use a credit card like the Barclay card or Amex that allows you to use your points. You're not using an actual freaking flyer miles.
Credit card points.
Like Barclay card, you can pay for your ticket with your points. So you can just – and that way you earn points, which I love. So that – because I love to earn as many miles I get, especially for, you know, to use them later or to get elite status so I get free upgrades.
Johnny's got more tips, 10 in total, and they're at his website, johnnyjet.com. Sign up there for the free travel newsletter. Use his free travel finder. It's all free, which is nice. JohnnyJet.com. Follow him on Twitter and Instagram, too, at JohnnyJet, because he's always got great stuff. Baby pictures, if nothing else. Have a great week. Thanksgiving is coming. I hope you have a great bird. You've already had Canadian Thanksgiving.
I keep thinking it's already been passed. Yeah.
Neil Laporte, the tech guy.
Marry a Canadian.
Yeah, marry a Canadian. You get Thanksgiving twice.
Or you get to escape if the person you get to don't want to win wins.
These are good. This is great stuff. This is nice. I like it.
Okay, good.
like it. I like it. You're doing great, Johnny. See, you could stay home and still write and do all the stuff you need to do.
You know, I'm getting more work done, but not as much as I thought I would be getting done.
Yeah. Well, there's other stuff to do now.
Oh, I'm staring at the baby most of the time.
I know. He's so beautiful. Oh.
And yeah, it's the best.
That's nice. And he's healthy and Natalie's good.
Yes, knock on wood.
Yeah. Well, you made it 7 weeks. I think you're going to be all right.
We got to get his shots coming up.
That's fun.
I'm nervous about that.
No. It's not bad. It's just,
all right.
He just goes, why, Daddy? Why? Why are you hurting me? What did I ever do to you?
Well, when he was born, he was so small. They put him right in the NICU for 4 days.
Oh, wow. Oh.
And they had to put an IV in him. And he had this huge thing on his arm. And then the next day, they're like, you know what? That IV ran out. We got to put another one on. And I literally, I never cried so hard in my life.
I know.
I went downstairs. I couldn't hold it. Aww. I was like in front of my mother-in-law and my sister-in-law. And I was so embarrassed. But I just could not. I just bawled like my mom died.
It's hard, isn't it?
It was the worst. And
it exposes you to all these emotions you didn't expect.
I haven't cried like that since my mom died.
And now you can't see movies where kids are in danger, and it's just, it changes everything. I stayed with Henry during his circumcision, and now I would probably not do it again.
Oh, I did the same thing. But that was another time.
There's a thing where you think, what did I do? Why did I do that? What was that? Yeah. Wasn't a good idea.
Yeah.
Seemed like a good idea, but it wasn't a good idea.
I know.
Yeah.
But anyway.
All right.
All right. Well, you have a great week.
All right. You're going to get to vote, right? Even though you're housebound. Are you going to take turns?
I'm just taking a few days off.
Good. All right. Well, have a great cruise. It's like a little mini thing.
It's a mini press trip.
Yeah. So like 2 days?
Yes,
oh, exactly. You're going to – okay, let me think. What's new? Is Seabourn's got a new one? A lot of new ships launching now. They just brought the new Oasis class to Port Canaveral, but you wouldn't fly all the way to Florida just for a couple of days.
You never know.
6,780 people on the Harmony of the Seas. Passengers.
Yeah.
6,780 passengers.
I know.
We were on the Anthem of the Seas, you know, this last Christmas.
Right.
And that was 5,000. It seemed like too many.
Yep.
6,700. Well, have a good time. But we got that loft suite that they're showing.
I know
off.
You did.
That was kind of cool.
If I do go on this ship, I can tell you I won't be in that suite.
Do the water slide. No, you'll be in the suite where they show you. And what's great about this suite is you have a high-res screen that looks like you've got a window.
Yes.
No, they won't. They wouldn't do that to you.
I think
try the internet.
And do the speed test.
The Voom blows me away, and it gives me courage. It gives me hope that when it comes to retirement, I'll be able to do it on a boat.
Hey, that's a
I could do a
subject.
Podcast on that Voom. It's
but
amazing.
I would definitely retire on a cruise ship and just go around the world.
Yeah.
Constantly.
Good. You and me. I'll be a little older than you.
We should start our own senior citizen home on a ship.
Do they still? They used to have a timeshare boat. I think that's
the world.
Yeah,
the world.
That was a
they
long
still
time.
Have it.
Yeah, but
they still have it.
But they told me that there are some people that, on the Regent that live on it. So you can still do that.
Almost every ship, people live on it.
Wow.
You'll find a few. I saw someone on a Seabourn once, and that's not cheap.
I'd love to live on a Seabourn.
I could live on that easily.
Cheaper than some nursing homes.
That's what they say. That's why they do it.
Thank you,
and they're
Johnny.
Not alone.
No, take I know. Care. See ya. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. 888-827-5536. Our website is techguylabs.com. We'll link there to Johnny Jett. And anything I mention, any website, any product I mention, techguylabs.com. Our last call was asking if you could wear out a computer. It reminded me of the story of, you know, the McLaren supercars? These are million-dollar vehicles. They only built 106 of them, the F1. Most powerful supercar in the world. I think nowadays might be, I don't know, they're still around. The value now, if you still had one, about $10 million. But they can only be serviced with an old compact laptop computer. The car was built in 1992, and the compact LTE 5280 is with its RS-232 serial port and floppy disk drive is the only computer that can interface to it. So when they maintain that computer, they have to use, because the car was designed in the 90s, a computer design. Now, a car built in 1992, especially if it's well taken care of, it doesn't feel like it's old and out of date. But boy, that compact LTE does. Holy cow. But that's how the diagnostics work. And so the McLaren folks have to go on eBay. When one of these, they do wear out, I guess. When one of these wears out, it was an 11.3-inch color LCD, 800 by 600, 120 megahertz Intel Pentium chip, 16 megabytes of memory, and a 1 gigabyte hard drive, which was really big at the time. So whenever these wear out, they have to go onto eBay to find somebody selling theirs. Unbelievable. But, it, you know, so they do wear out, but they last a long time. Manny, Parkland, Florida. Hi, Manny. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. Welcome.
Thank you. I am I'm here with my son, Connor. Graduated high school.
Hi, Connor.
Hi. He did a 1 year at a community college. He wants to get now into the IT business.
Good.
And we're wondering, you know, if a traditional school or online, because I listen to you on Mac Break and some other shows, and you talk about, you know, different courses.
So you've probably, if you've already shopped around, you've looked at the technical schools, and they cost more than a private college in some cases.
Right.
Thousands, tens of thousands. And they will tell you all sorts of things. Oh, we'll help you get a job. We've got job placement stuff. But that's not a guarantee. And I think there are, depends on whether your son is a self-starter or needs somebody to kind of prod him along. You know, sometimes you need to have a scheduled class and you need to have grades and all of that to succeed. Right. But if you are a self-starter, if you're a self-learner, I think you can do better than going to a technical school. To okay. get a job in IT, of course you have to have the knowledge. But the problem is most people who are hiring don't have the time and skills maybe even to test you and your knowledge. So they go by certifications. It's right. kind of like a diploma. It's a piece of paper that says you can do this. And there are a variety of IT certs. There's Microsoft certs, Cisco certs. There's the A-plus cert says you know how to fix computers. So he should look at the certifications that he wants to get in the areas he likes. And by the way, going to IT, that's a broad term. It could be everything from a certified ethical hacker. Yeah, he likes that one, I think. So that's an actual cert, the CEH cert, because, and by the way, that's an area where there's a lot of hiring going on. Somebody who right. can do what they call pen testing, or short for penetration testing. Right. Banks hire them. Everybody hires them now to see if their network's secure. So this guy takes classes in hacking skills
mm-hmm.
and then can go around and help you not be hacked. That's a boy. The way if you were going to pick one area in IT that's a growth area, that's it. But there's lots of them. Network administration, huge. It's just you should figure out what you like to do. What is it you know you're going to do better at something you enjoy than something you don't enjoy. Now you can go get books and self study. We have a sponsor, and I'm going to give them a big plug here, even though they're a sponsor, because I think this is a great way to learn. It's called IT Pro TV. It's itpro.tv. And what they do is you subscribe. I think it's $50 a month thereabouts, which is cheap. I mean, even one of those books is $89.
Right.
And you watch. You watch TV, or you watch on your laptop or your tablet. And they have a library, including the Certified Ethical Hacker, the MCSA, the A+, all of the certs. And they're doing more all the time. And if you could, you know, you should go and just take a look, sample it, because you get a sense of this is, would this be a, it really depends. Is this a good way for you to learn? Some people it's not, because they'll, you know, they'll put it on the Roku and then they'll go have some potato chips and then they'll fire up World of Warcraft. And by the time they're done, they've learned nothing.
Right. So is it interactive or is it?
Yeah, they have a chat room. They have practice exams. They have Q&A sessions that are kind of like study groups. It's not as interactive as a school would be. You're not hanging out with other kids doing that. Right. And there's a lot to be said for that, but it's also very pricey.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could look at your local community college and maybe supplement something like IT Pro or Books with less expensive classes at a community college. But I think the technical schools at this point are not very economical, I guess. I'm trying to say this in a non-prejudicial way.
As far as what you get.
Yeah, they're very expensive. And I think if you're a self-starter, this is a you can learn, you know, everything's online.
Right.
You could do it for free. Now, the next step is you take the exam and then get the cert. But so the ideal would be you learn everything, you maybe have some computers, you mess with it, you really learn it, but you also learn how to take the exam and what the answers to the questions are so you can get the cert. And then once you've got the cert, you want to keep building your skills, and you're going to get an entry-level job to start. And ultimately, the cert isn't going to get you that far. It's going to get you in the door. And at that point, it's going to be job experience, references, and how well you do. But boy, I think it's a great area to go into if you have the inclination. And of course, I've been doing this for so long. I meet people all the time who say, "Yeah, I kind of was into it, and I saw your TV show or heard your radio show, and I thought I would like to do this." And they've gotten into it, and they love it as a profession.
That's so great.
Yeah, the cert is, but remember, the cert is not a guarantee of skill. It's a guarantee you took the test and passed it. You want to keep getting – you got to get those skills if you're going to do well in this business. You've got to know it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. But, and as far as getting into that first, you know, a job or trying to get some experience, besides just the normal, you know, venues through applications in Monster or, you know, other websites, do they – is it like other schools where they'll have internships or, you know, something?
You know, that's the technical colleges offer job placement. And a lot of times because, you know, there's a heel down the street, there's jobs, you know, people go down and say, okay, you know, I got 10 jobs. Let me hire some of your graduates. So that is the real advantage that you have there. Anything else, you're going to do your own legwork.
Right.
Which I think is fine. In fact, I would prefer to hire somebody who's a go-getter myself, you know. So it's just that first job. Ultimately, it's going to be how good you are.
Right.
That first, you know, it's the same for any business. The first job's the hardest to get because you got to prove yourself. I would start with IT Pro TV, something like that. Just, you know, see if you can do it on your own.
Right.
And set yourself a schedule. You know, say I'm gonna be taking the exam in 6 months. I need to learn this. Find something you really love, and maybe as you learn, you can find a job, a low paying or even internship job in the area that will help you get those actual chops, which ultimately is what people need.
Yeah, correct.
Okay. Hey, good luck. It's a great area.
Great.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Good luck to you. All right. Yeah, but I know so many people work in IT who just love it, and the thing is, I think a job where you learn and you're growing all the time is ideal, right? You want something that's challenging you constantly. And boy, this is a job that's changing every minute, right? Especially if you're in sysadmin or in security, networking. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You're out.
All right. And I am not an expert on this, so I only say what I've learned from friends and listeners and so forth. And anybody in the chat room who wants to weigh in on this, too, I'd appreciate your feedback, too. You probably know more than I do. How many of you are in IT or tech? Probably a lot of you, right? Certs in Cisco and Windows doubled your salary. That's interesting, yeah. Trick, though, is to prove you can do the job, right? And that's, I think that's the point of the certs in many cases, is that you at least, you know, they at least have some idea that you have a set of a certain set of skills, or maybe not. I don't know. Trainable, right? Well, I always hear that, and we've always said that. Hire somebody who's smart, not necessarily skilled. Somebody who can learn. Yeah, see, there you go. How'd you get your first job, though, Sandman? No, I don't think Apple will ever do a touchscreen. Read the latest posting from Horas Didier on a Simco. Actually, it's not the latest posting. Second to last posting. Wherefore art thou, Macintosh? And Horas is really good. But basically, he makes the point that Apple's PC market This is maybe the critical graph. This is the percent of time spent on a device. The yellow is PC, is desktop. The green is mobile. And you see over the last few years, from 2013 to 2016, it's gone from a little under half to a little under a third on desktop. So the point being, desktop is a shrinking market, right? Apple says it's clear where he says Apple knows where the puck is going, and not just now. Mobile's been foreseeable as a disruption to computing a decade ago, at least to some of us. So what do you do with a Mac? To answer that, you have to understand what the purpose of the Mac is in this mobile era. And remember, that's not like asking what a PC is. And this is where Apple and Microsoft are in very different situations. He says PC makers and Microsoft are not fighting with a usurper in their midst. Apple is being disrupted by the iPhone. He says the Mac is not treated disparagingly. It deserves and gets respect. It's preserved, but with limited responsibilities. So that's the question. What is it allowed to be at Apple? What is it? It cannot take on the role of being the future. That belongs to the touchscreen device. It will not morph into a touch device any more than a teen's parent will become cool by putting on skinny jeans. What it will do is become better at what it is hired to do. The key to the Mac, therefore, becomes that which the iPhone or iPad is not. And this is absolutely reflected in Phil Schiller's thinking, and I'm sure at the top at Tim Cook. It's not an indirect input. It's an indirect input device. It's not a touch device. The operating system, the apps, the UX are all oriented around the indirect, i.e. keyboard and mouse, input method. The iPhone's capacitive touch brought about the direct input method, which was the third pivot in input methods. Each pivot launched a new set of platforms. The Mac is the legacy platform. It's not obsolete, but it is a decreasing share of engagement. And this is really the key. Alternate ways of doing the jobs it does well with direct input, with touch, are emerging, but not good enough yet. In other words, Apple sees a future where you can do everything you want to do on an iPad and iPhone, but it's not there yet. The children are still adolescent and making lots of stupid mistakes. There's still life in the parents, i.e. the Mac. Management thus has to focus on how to make the keyboard trackpad interface better while still saying and believing that the future is in touch. In other words, there's no pressure on them to make the Mac a touch device, and probably there's a good reason not to. And this is where Microsoft really went wrong. They had to put touch in Windows, right? Because they didn't have a credible touch platform. So it's a good article. Because the Mac is part of a larger family at Apple, it's never going to become a touch device. And I think he actually nailed it. The Mac is essentially a legacy. Desktop computing for Apple is a legacy that they want to continue, but eventually will be superseded. Well, hey. Welcome. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smart phones, smart watches, anything with a chip in it. 8888-ASK-LEO. Virtual reality, smart cars, self-driving cars, anything with a chip in it. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my phone number. The website, techguylabs.com. Beth in Studio City's next. Hi, Beth. Leo Laporte.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
So my question is, I purchased Microsoft OneDrive so I could back up all my files and pictures on the cloud. And
yeah.
Now I'm on my Lenovo Yoga.
How do you like that, by the way?
I love it. I heard you talking earlier about it. I really like it.
Yeah.
A lot.
Nice. Very nice system, I think.
Yeah, I agree. But anyway, so now I've got two copies of, or maybe even three copies of OneDrive on my Yoga, and I'm afraid to delete one of them for fear it's going to be the one on the cloud.
No, you can delete them all. You mean you have two copies of the data?
Yes, like all my pictures are on my Yoga.
So you have a OneDrive folder that reflects what's on the OneDrive. Mm-hmm. You also have a local folder, which is just the same thing. It just happens to be the same thing because that's your local copy of your photos. What you've done is you've set up OneDrive to synchronize with your with your hard drive, right?
Yeah.
So what it did is, and did you have another computer at some point?
Yes, I did. But it's been a few years.
So the one thing you don't want to delete is the folder that's synchronized with the cloud, the OneDrive folder, because that will be a signal to OneDrive to delete it on the cloud as well.
Okay. So how do I know which one is? I know. It's not funny. Even the mic.
No, I shouldn't laugh. So that's a good question. You know what? I should look at. Let me look at my Surface and see if you write. You should be able to look at a folder or examine a folder and know if it's being synchronized or not. So what you could safely delete is your non-synchronized local folder. That's just an extra copy. Are you running out of space?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's why you want to do this.
Yes.
let me look. Actually, let me ask the chat room, too, to look, because there are probably people sitting in the chat room who are using OneDrive this way. I don't use OneDrive for backup, so I'm not exactly sure what it would look like. If you use Dropbox, for instance, for backup, the drive will be called the Dropbox drive. And that helps because then you understand, that's the synchronized drive.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that's what OneDrive does. It sounds like it's not. It sounds like you're telling me that the synchronized drive isn't obviously being synchronized.
Well, but now that you're making me think that way, maybe there is, I've noticed a little
little checkbox or a little
a little X, a red X.
Yeah. So that's telling you if it's been synchronized or not. So the one way to test that is to drag a small file to that folder, and that icon should change. The green check means it's been synchronized, and then it will change to some other icon saying, "Oh no, I'm synchronizing it."
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that folder, one thing you can go into let me think. You don't want to turn off synchronization because you like this, right? This is your backup.
Yes.
I hate for you to delete your local files, but if you have identical files in a synchronized folder, one with that checkbox, and a folder that's not synchronized, you can delete the folder that's not synchronized.
Right. But I need to make sure those folders are in the synchronized folder.
Yeah, you don't want to send a signal to OneDrive saying,
I know,
delete this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I guess one way to do this, but this shouldn't be so complicated. One way to do this would be to get everything from OneDrive, merge all the folders into a single folder, then tell that folder to synchronize to OneDrive, and don't do anything local ever again.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Well, it's mostly my photographs, so.
Yeah, well, here's what I would really do. And get an external drive, a USB key and copy everything to that and then unplug it. So now you have a backup.
Okay. So back it up.
Back it up locally. And then you can start messing around.
Yeah, that's probably the safest way.
Yeah. And then one way to mess around would be just to turn off OneDrive synchronization.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think you could do that safely now, but again, I want you to have a backup before you do this. But if you turn off OneDrive synchronization, you can do that in the taskbar and say, don't synchronize anymore.
Okay.
Now you have a copy on the OneDrive, on the cloud of everything.
Mm-hmm.
You have a copy or two or three locally.
Yeah.
You've also got a copy on an external drive.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, what I would probably do is, so you disable synchronization, and then you can delete everything locally because you have it on your, I hate to do that too. what we want to do is make the OneDrive, the cloud, have everything.
Right.
One copy and exactly one copy of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then delete everything locally and have that one copy synchronize. And make sure now when you put new photos on that you put them in that synchronized folder.
Mm-hmm.
That
right.
way you'll have one copy of everything locally and one copy of everything on OneDrive.
Right.
What you don't want to get is in a situation at any point, and this is why I stopped what I was about to tell you, where you have one copy of anything. Because then you could run the risk of losing data, right? You don't have a backup. So what I was going to suggest is that you delete everything on your internal hard drive because you've got a backup of it on the external.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the things on that external may not be duplicated on OneDrive, so those could be a single copy, and that's risky, so I don't want you to do that.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm saying?
I do, but I'm still kind of thinking about how do I get...
Well, look in your OneDrive settings. See which folders you're synchronizing.
Yeah.
And what you want to do is get those folders synchronized with your local-only folders. You can do that with... I would use Second Copy. That's a file synchronizing program. SyncToy from Microsoft is free. It does the same thing. Point it at those two folders and say, anything that's not in the OneDrive folder, put there, right? Once that's done and then OneDrive synced, now you have two copies of all your photos, one in the cloud, one on your computer, and you can delete the non-OneDrive folders.
Right. Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
I think that's the solution.
Okay.
This is why it's complicated, right?
It is.
And it's why I don't usually recommend these kinds of solutions for backup. Because they're kind of have that ancillary effect, but that's not their primary intent. The primary intent of OneDrive is to have stuff in the cloud so you can work on it anywhere. Really supposed to be a backup solution. That synchronization that makes it confusing because you're not sure, do I have a copy?
Right.
What do I got?
Right.
Yeah. So,
well, maybe I need to go to my husband's Carbonite account and just
let Carbonite do it.
Everything over there, right?
But you've been using OneDrive on multiple computers?
No.
Okay.
I didn't use it until I got after
okay.
I had the lunch
Good.
For the yoga.
Okay. So get Microsoft. Just Google SyncToy. It's free from Microsoft. Get it from Microsoft only. Synchronize your OneDrive folder with those other folders, and then make sure once it's backed up to OneDrive, you can delete those other folders. The local folders only.
Okay. All right.
Good luck.
Okay.
And still make a backup just in case.
Yeah.
Because it's easy enough to make a mistake. One doesn't. You don't want to lose your pictures. They're too valuable. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. That was a puzzle, huh?
You're out.
That's why we recommend Carbonite. I already had all my dongles, Mike, so I don't get to take advantage of the new dongle discount. You know, Apple may say, oh, you know, everybody's happy with the new MacBooks, but the fact that they offered a discount, to me, seems like maybe they are getting some negative feedback. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo, the phone number, Rick in Glendale, California. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Leo, thanks for taking my call.
I've been a
lifelong Yahoo email user. When I say lifelong, I mean the life of Yahoo email.
Yeah, not your life. No, me too. I've had a Yahoo email. I paid for a pro account since day one, yeah.
And it's worked relatively well. Last couple of years gotten a little clunky, but I've got a millennial tech-savvy daughter who mentioned to me a free app called Boomerang, which you're probably familiar with, and it works great, which it allows you to compose messages and then schedule them to send later. So if I'm up cranking out and composing emails at 3 in the morning, but I don't want my recipients to know I did it at 3 in the morning, yeah. I can schedule it to go later in the business day. Only problem is Boomerang works with Gmail, not with Yahoo email. So that set me about the process of migrating over to Gmail.
Good.
Now, a couple months later, and like you, I was using a paid Yahoo, their Concierge First Class Deluxe
right.
paid account that charged me $19.99 a year.
Right.
But as part of that, I could get a human when I needed tech support. And now I'm on Gmail, and they apparently don't provide.
No.
My question is, I'm not looking for free. I mean, I know you get what you pay for, and it's free. I'm willing to pay for tech support, but for my organization, I run a couple of AdWords accounts, and maybe that's made me gun shy of just Googling the term Gmail tech support and clicking on the first thing that comes up. You have any recommendations for somebody who wants support on Gmail?
We always joke that Google's support is a Python script. It's a computer program. They do actually, Google has very good support for some of their products, but a free product, you're not going to expect good support. It's all the paid products like Google Voice or Google Fi, the Google Apps for Work, stuff like that.
Right.
If you were to upgrade to a Google Apps for Work account, you'd get very good support as well. But yeah, for a free Gmail account, I can't really blame them. I've never found that I needed support, and it may be that you don't. What kinds of things do you expect for support? I mean,
Under Yahoo, and like you, I've got a work domain. You know, I could, I don't know what you call it, an alias or whatever, but I can send an outgoing mail and have it appear though it's coming from my work domain.
Yeah, Google will do that as well. Yeah,
it will. I know it will. And now it's broken. It won't work. And I could test it because I go straight from the Gmail account and it sends fine. But if I put it from that kind of spoof thing, and the really sad thing is I don't get an error message. It looks like it was sent and it's in my sent box as though it was sent. But I talked to people I sent to and they didn't get it. So something's broke. It's a setting issue. And it's just where I need support from.
Yeah, you'd like some support. Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Do they? I don't know what the answer is. They're famous for not really providing great support. I'll tell you what. I use other services for my primary email. For instance, Fastmail, which is an Australian company, fastmail.com, and they provide good support. I think you're going to have to pay for email if you want good support, basically.
And I'm not adverse to that. I'm just trying to find maybe the best deal in terms of paying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, most of the people use Gmail. I mean, there is a number. Have you tried calling it? Or
no, I haven't even found a number. You're saying there's a number out there somewhere for Gmail?
I thought there was.
Well, I'll check your chat room to see if somebody...
Yeah, somebody's saying in the chat room, 855... Now, I don't... Max, is this really it? I don't want to give out a phone number that's not really Google's support. I don't want you calling somebody saying, hey, are you Google? No, it's Sally. What do you want? So I don't – maybe I shouldn't say that out loud.
Okay.
You know, having learned from 24/7. Yeah, if you got G Suite, the paid version of Google, you do, in fact, get it. But,
okay, well, I'll look into that. I mean, again, I'm not adverse to paying for something, even for email. You just don't know, you know, how much we're talking about paying. It was really nice with Yahoo. It was 20 a year for pre-existing customers. I think it's up to 50 a year, and I could even do that with no problem. But I don't want to, you know, get out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I believe they have email support at least. I don't know. You know, if you Google, and as I have just done, phone support for Gmail, you get other third-party companies that are going to do it. And that's interesting. That might be a solution as a third party. I wonder if
there are reviews of those guys out there.
I think the best you're going to get for a free service like that is email support. It's just very expensive to have customer service reps sitting there answering the phone for a free product.
I think you were telling us one time, Leo, that's why cell service is so much cheaper in some of the Asian countries, because the folks there will read the manual before.
That's right. That's quite. They're quite famous. A number of companies charge more for products in the U.S. because they don't expect U.S. customers to read the manual, so they know they're going to get phone calls. I remember that was a couple of years ago. I do remember seeing that. Golly, the other thing is, of course, to go to the forums, and a lot of times people get support from each other better than they ever get from a company, even if the company has customer service reps and support. So I would go look at the Google forums and try posting there with that particular question. I don't know the answer to that question.
Believe it or not, you've been really helpful, Leo, because my experience has usually been when I come up with an unanswerable question, it's because it is really hard to answer.
Yes.
Not just because I was being a total dummy.
No, you probably went through the settings already.
Yeah.
And you did know, in fact, that they had this feature. Why it's not working, that's another question entirely, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. But you've been helpful, and I appreciate that.
G Suite is not super expensive.
Okay, well,
I would look at that. That's certainly what we use, and then they have much better support, of course, because you're paying them $5 a month.
Well, I could live with that, so that's not a problem.
Yeah, I'd take a look at that.
I'll look into that.
Yeah,
okay. Hey, thanks, Leo.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling. Yeah, it's designed for the pro user, you know, the work. And that's what we use at work here at the office. Yes, this is a job. What do you think? I come in on my weekends just for fun? 8888 Ask Leo. It's not real. It's more like an adventure. It's not a job. It's an adventure. Let's take a little break, and I shall return with more of your calls. 8888 Ask Leo. Right after this. So, Florida vet, you would appreciate this. I'm getting a new toaster oven. Florida vet was saying, "Don't microwave your food. Use a toaster oven." Who was it talked me into this? I think it was Stacey Higginbotham. The world's most expensive toaster oven. But like you can use your iPhone and crazy, man. But we use our toaster oven all the time, so I'm sure it does convection. 8888 Ask Leo. The Gizwiz, Dick D. Bartolo, coming up with a gadget of the week in just a bit. But first, Sean in Houston, Texas. Hello, Sean.
Hi.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing well. So what I actually have is not so much like an answer to try and fix something, but more of an explanation.
Okay.
On that, I guess what I'm seeing on my Sophos UTM. So actually, it was you and Steve Gibson that got me sort of pushed into the whole trying to learn security type stuff.
Yeah.
So I set up the Sophos UTM in my apartment just for giggles. And but
UTM stands for Unified Threat Management. And the idea is it's kind of like a router, but it's got all sorts of sophisticated technology to keep people out of your network, basically. And you said what kind? Socialist?
No, that's Sophos.
Oh, Sophos, I've heard of. Yeah, Socialist, I never heard of that one. Sophos is great. Yeah, I like their stuff. And did you set up the hardware yourself or are you using one of their appliances?
No, I'm using like an old Dell system.
Yeah, Sophos acquired Astaro. And Astaro for years had allowed you to download their software for free. It was open source and put it on any hardware. And I guess Sophos is continuing that model, which I think is great. So what would you like to know?
Okay. So every once in a while when I'm bored at work, I'll look at the network protection thing. And basically it shows a lot of the dropped sources and all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
And what I noticed was it was dropping some packets from localhost. And this supposed localhost was from Vietnam.
How could a localhost be from Vietnam?
Yeah. And
that's a foreign host.
Because I know that localhost shouldn't be routed through the internet, and I was like, well, is that maybe something weird with the Sophos UTM, or is that maybe some spoofed packets that were being dropped? And I just thought, what was your thought on that?
Yeah. Boy, you got me. So localhost usually means your own system, and it has its own special address, which is 127.0.0.1. or sometimes we call it home sweet home. In fact, there's a great geek t-shirt that says there's no place like 127.0.0.1. So the local host, the idea is if you had a server running on your system, you could open a browser and instead of typing yahoo.com, type localhost, and it would go to whatever server is on your system. If you didn't specify a port number, it would just go to port 80, but you could say localhost, say, colon 8080. It would check for a server running on your system on port 8080. So you're right. That's what a localhost is. A localhost can't originate in Vietnam because unless you're in Vietnam.
Oh, yeah. Definitely not.
So I would look at that log a little more closely and maybe see if, I mean, one possibility is you have a server on your system that is having a conversation with Vietnam. We wouldn't want that, would we?
No.
Yeah. Does it say what port? Does it say what port it's on?
Yes. Actually, it says that it's 23. So that'd be Telnet, and I know that I have country block turned on.
Okay. So this is is a very, and one of the reasons you run a UTM is exactly for this. So Telnet allows somebody to log into your computer remotely. And in fact, you may remember 2 weeks ago we had a giant DDoS attack. The internet was slowed down by people who were attacking, and they were using cameras and DVRs manufactured in China by a company called Chiang Mai. And Chiang Mai made one small error. They put a Telnet server on the camera and the DVR, and the password on the server was hardwired in and well known. If you knew the password, you could log into any Chiang Mai camera or DVR. That's not good. And in fact, that's how the Mirai virus worked. It would surf the net looking for Telnet servers and try the several default passwords. It actually had a database of default passwords in it until it got logged in. And if it was able to log into a camera or a DVR, it would take it over, put malware on it. So do you run a Telnet server?
No. Actually, I have Telnet turned off.
Good. So
I had SSH turned on at one point just for giggles.
Yeah, no one should ever use Telnet because it's unsecured. SSH is a secure replacement for Telnet. I'll tell you, any computer that's on the internet is constantly getting banged on port 23 and port 443 on the SSH ports. And I'll tell you, if I look at my logs, I see constant attempts to log on to a non-existent server. So I suspect what you're looking at. Oh, wait a minute. Here's something. Boy, the chat room is smart. So you ever hear of Shodan?
Actually, yes, I have heard of Shodan.
So Shodan blog. This is really interesting, and I think this is what's going on here. The country of Vietnam resolves to localhost. This is from February of last year. This is a bizarre case of the largest ISP in a country setting up their network in a way where every customer's IP resolves back to localhost.
What?
Now, you would have to be in Vietnam for this to happen, I think. Shodan is a really interesting site where you can, some might say it's kind of designed for malware authors, but the idea is you can search for the Internet of Things and see what's going on out there and see if you can, you can search for IP addresses and look for exploits on the IP addresses. Very powerful, very useful. Maybe that's related. Who's your ISP?
It's just Comcast.
Yeah. I don't think Comcast would do this. Largest ISP in the country. Of the nearly 5 million banners in Shodan for Vietnam, 1.5 million of them resolved to localhost. I'm not sure what's going on, but I would read this post and dig deeper on this one. That's bizarre. It sounds, I mean, how could this couldn't be a coincidence, right? But I'm not sure why you're getting this spurious result, but it does sound like it's related to this. Maybe somebody's suggesting, and I think this is accurate, a spoofed reverse DNS. or something like that.
Okay.
In other words, it is possible, apparently with a bad BGP setting or something, to make it look like an entire country is on your local network. This is not a desirable thing. And these kinds of things happen on the internet. I think you probably know more than I do, since you're running this Sophos UTM, about analyzing those logs. One good suggestion, anytime you have a log with a strange result, is to copy and paste that result into Google. And,
yeah,
you'll find other people reporting something similar. But I would start at this Shodan blog post from February 2015, because, boy, that sounds like it's right up your alley. I suspect that's a Google result. Very strange. You think his host's file is corrupted? Maybe. Maybe there's something wrong in his host's file. That is the geekiest call we've had all week. 8888 Ask Leo. The Gizwiz just around the corner. He's got a great gadget for us. And I think we're going to find out the results of the What the Heck Is It contest, because here we are at the beginning of a new month. So we'll find out what that picture was. And we can get a chance to play our new What the Heck Is It contest. And if you know why you would get this kind of log error on your UTM appliance, maybe you can call to 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You're out.
That's a very, I have no idea what that's all about. That sounds very strange, Sean. So,
yeah, I even asked some coworkers about it, and they weren't really too sure either. So.
But this, I have to think it's related to this. Bizarre. Yeah. I just saw that. I don't understand. Of the banners and Shodan for Vietnam. So it's it looks like. Look at this, countrywide local host. So this is a misconfigured reverse DNS, I think. So that would be, my guess is what you're seeing is, I got an idea. So the log is recording that somebody from Vietnam is attempting access on port 23 on Telnet. What the log did as a convenience is it reverse DNS'd it, right? Trying to find, I bet you this appliance does that. It'll say, well, can we find a country or a locale or whatever? Let's do a reverse DNS on this IP address. So it did. And it came up as localhost because this Vietnamese ISP is a bozo.
Okay.
Does that make sense? When you look at your log, does it have more information than just IP addresses? Does it sometimes say country or locale or even...
Not really.
ISP. Because I think that's not unusual in a report to sometimes to do the reverse DNS. I bet you that's what happened.
Yeah, it shows the IP, then it just shows like the flag, and you hover over the flag and it says Vietnam. The amount of packets and whatever.
But that's where it gets Vietnam, right?
That's where it gets Vietnam.
Right. So it is doing reverse DNS to get Vietnam. So that's why it's saying it's a local host.
Okay.
See what I'm saying? It's identifying it as localhost, even though it's not. It's a guy in Vietnam on this ISP.
Huh. Well, okay. That definitely makes sense then.
Yeah.
That's funny.
That is so weird, and that's the chat room. Thank you, chat room, for finding that one. that is just bizarre. In fact, you could do this. You could take the IP address they provided and do your own reverse DNS on it. And I bet you it would turn up localhost. But it's not you. It's them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think we got it.
All right.
Wow.
Well, then,
that's
geeky
as hell.
I'll go ahead and let you go.
All right. Hey, nice talking to you, Sean. All right. Take care.
Thank you.
Wow. Dick, you would have known that, I think.
Possibly. Only because I turned away. I was looking at... the winners from the past. What the heck is it?
Oh, yes. We must look those up. Has Myra been by lately?
Myra is sitting right here.
Myra, I love your Facebook posts.
Yeah,
Going into hiding on Wednesday.
I love it. No, no, no. We're going to win.
You are going to win.
We're going to win. It's going to be okay. Admittedly, there's a few people that are going to run and get their muskets.
Yes, yes.
Wow.
I know. I'm
freaking
out.
No, Myra, you're great. Myra is my kind of fiery left-wing zealot.
My latest favorite name to
you say things I wouldn't dare. I don't. You notice I don't ever. I don't say anything on Facebook about politics. I don't want to get into that at all.
No. Neither do I. Ever since I wrote a dumb Donald match game question and someone said, hey, don't get political.
What was it?
That was just a dumb Donald question. They didn't want me to use the word Donald. I've been using it for 20, 30 years.
You can't even use the name Donald anymore.
Yeah.
All right, hang on. we're spending a Saturday in the park with Dick. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, Dick DiBartolo is here. He is for years. If you know the name, as I did, one of my producers, I'm thinking now 15 years ago, came up to me and said, hey, there's this guy named Dick DiBartolo wants to be on the show. Do you know who he is? I said, do I know? Of course I do. I've read him my whole life. That's Mad Magazine's maddest writer. Yeah, that guy.
Yeah. I asked to come to the studio just to see the show.
I said, get him on.
Yeah, exactly. It was great.
He's not only the funniest guy I know, but he's also a crazy gadget hound. And each week he joins us with another gadget. That's why we call him the Gizwiz. He's a gizmo guy.
A gizmo guy. Leo, I don't know. Do you remember the name Panono, the camera?
Panono.
Leo,
this is not a good name for a camera.
Leo,
can I take a picture of you with my Panono? No.
Leo, wait until you hear about this. This has been going on for 3 years. I saw this CES 2014, 2015. It wasn't out yet, but they had raised about a little more than $1 million. This is a 108 megapixel camera.
Whoa!
Now, it's not one camera. It is 36 3-megapixel cameras.
No. When you see the price, you'll say no.
Yes. In the shape of a ball.
Yeah. I've seen this. You throw it up in the air.
Yes.
At parties. and then it never comes down, and you go, where'd my Panono go?
Well, I met them again at Photo Plus Expo, and I said, guys, when it first came out, you could buy it on Indiegogo for $4.99. I was just in the press room, and I saw, is this now $1,499? And they said, no, because we can't make them for that. It is now $1,999. And they said, when we said, like, you could throw it in the air and you didn't have to worry if it fell, they said, well, don't let it, if you throw it in the air, make sure you catch it.
Because your $2,000 camera is kind of fragile.
Yes, exactly.
Now, you got to be mispronouncing. It must be Panono.
Panono?
Well, because it's a panorama camera, right?
Oh, okay. It is. Okay.
It's a panoramic ball camera.
Yes. Yes. So, but now they figure, who's going to throw this in the air and risk $2,000? So you can pay another $50.
Oh, good.
And get a stick to screw into the side of it. So now you can just hold it over your head.
But you don't want to do that because then your pano has a stick in it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, the people at the booth, they're young and they're very energetic.
Yeah,
but
they're positive.
And also, Leo, in the 3 years, drones have taken over, so you can get pictures from way.
Has it been 3 years?
Yes. It started at CES 2014. So in another month, we'll be going to CES 2017. So it has been around for just about 3 years.
$1,999. Or get the set, which includes a tripod, for $2,110.12.
Yeah,
what's the 12 cents for?
Shipping.
No, shipping's not included at that price.
Oh, my gosh.
Holy cow.
Oh, my gosh. All right, but you know what? Do you still use your Theta S?
I have it. I always think I'm going to use it, but nah.
Okay.
I like it. I mean, that's a great, that's my recommendation for
at the show, they introduced a different version. Same optics.
Oh.
They took out the streaming and knocked $50 off it.
See, that the one I have is $350, so I guess it'd be about $300. That's a much better choice, I think, than a $2,000 camera that could break when you throw it in the air.
And the Ricoh, you just hold in your hand like a person.
Yeah. I used it quite a bit on a year ago on my trip. I keep thinking about bringing it out, and I just, you know, I forget. But it's pretty nice. The only issue I have with it is resolution, and I'm sure this, because it has so many cameras, has a much higher resolution image coming out of it. And they mentioned that, you know, Lufthansa and BMW Universal Studios use it. So it's kind of a professional grade.
Yeah, panel. And it's stills only, so you can't do video.
Yeah.
And also, when you throw it in the air, you have to throw it straight up. Otherwise, it's going to be blurry, and it won't take a picture because it knows it's not going to be good.
Do not throw your Pinono in the air. You know, if you have two Pinonos, that's a panini, and it's making me hungry. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So
you could microwave that, but not on high.
Yeah, I mean, it looks a little like Nokia's Ozo camera, and that's $60,000. So really, it's quite a deal.
Oh, this is a bargain.
It's a bargain.
Yeah.
Bargain at 1/30th the price. You'll find Dick at gizwiz.biz. Usually he's got, well, let's face it, cheaper and junkier gadgets than this.
Yeah.
Maybe not junkier, just cheaper.
Yeah, cheaper.
GizWiz stuff is, if you go there, you can click the GizWiz visits the tech guy, and you can get notes on where to buy this fine Pinono and more about the Theta, I see. And if you go down the row a little bit and you click What the Heck Is It, you can play the What the Heck Is It contest. Now, he's got a new pink gadget of some kind. It looks like something that maybe they would use. Oh, I know what this is. When you want to get your tongue pierced, You put your tongue in there, and it holds it in place, right? It's a tongue piercer.
Well, yeah, you know, gosh. I'll have to get something else to put up there.
What was this one? I don't even want to say what I thought this one was. Oh, yeah, this is a good idea.
It's a great idea.
What the heck is it?
It is a gadget. If the bowl breaks off and the little metal piece is stuck in there, you stick this in there. Press on the handles, which pushes the rubber little gaskets against it, and then you can unscrew it.
Yeah.
And if there's shards of glass left from the bowl, that little plastic sleeve protects your hands.
This is everybody's had that happen once or twice. A bulb
that's
breaks.
That's the thing. You buy it. I bought one and keep praying that a bulb will break.
Well, you know what? Now that they've got LED bulbs, I think there's not going to be a whole lot of market for this.
Exactly.
I saw the other day, and we've talked about LED bulbs since they were $100.
Yes.
C. Crane Company was selling them.
Yes.
And I remember Bob Crane of C. Crane saying, someday these will be affordable. I just saw an ad for $2 LED bulbs. $2! That might be with a rebate from your local utility, but still, we've come a long way, baby.
Absolutely.
Yeah, everybody should.
And someone in the chat room has pointed out, as did someone who won the contest, you can get a broken bulb out by using a potato. Okay.
Ah. Well,
a piece of potato, stick it in the socket.
Look at all these people. I got five guys in the studio watching the show, and they're all nodding. Like everybody knows that. You just use a broken potato. Do you cut the potato in half?
Yeah, I don't know, but you know what? Every time I've been on the show there, I keep thinking I smell French fries. I think that they forget.
These are
the potato guys. Out of the sockets. Yeah.
Gizwiz.biz. Play the What the Heck Is It contest. It's fun. It's not, you know, you get an autographed copy of Mad Magazine for the best wrong answer, or for the few of you that can figure it out, get the right answer. Gizwiz.biz. Dick also does a great podcast, gizwiz.tv, if you want to get the Gizwiz podcast.
Perfect.
Yes. Dickie D, always a pleasure. And I'm now going to use a potato instead of this gadget, the ease out broken remover from Alden.
Broken glass remover.
Yeah.
Wow. All right, Pally, I'll see you next week.
$9 on Amazon.
Yeah, and shipping. I couldn't find one. I had to go buy another one in case someone said, let me see that work.
And you can't have it for dinner.
No, you cannot.
Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy. See you next week.
We are out of time. Thanks so much to Michael Cozio, for our musical director, to Heather Hammond, our phone ranger. Thanks to you for joining me. We'll be back again next time, and I hope you will too. And if you're not, we'll have a great geek week. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Take care. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you next time.